everybody, and welcome to RHAP's podcast of Survivor in 2018, the retrospective that all Survivor fans want to listen to after a dynamite year of Survivor, both domestic and international. My name is Mike Bloom, and I am so excited. It's only been a few weeks since Survivor has wrapped in the year 2018, but now's a better time than any to really pontificate on the year that was, especially with a slew of great Survivor seasons coming our way as well. And I'm not alone. I am joined by two individuals who I have the distinct pleasure of talking Survivor with throughout 2018. First, let me bring in somebody who I spent so much time with on the RHAP B&B this season, talking through Survivor Ghost Island and Survivor David versus Goliath, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
I'm great. I can't believe we're going to do this. I've been looking forward to this for a while now, and I'm so excited to dig into everything that was Survivor 2018.
But of course, Survivor in 2018 was not just the seasons that occurred in the U.S. International Survivor experienced a huge boon, as well as this person. I really have to say that I think, personally, 2018 was the year of Shannon Gates, and I'm so happy to have her back to talk Survivor. Shannon, how you doing?
I'm great. But yeah, if 2018 was like my year and we're going to try and put that together, I really don't want to have like the graphs on that. I don't want the survey on that. I'm just going to take your opinion on it and we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, we are not surveying which podcaster's year it was, because I think that's...
Please don't give people ideas, actually.
Well, I don't know. You've already tried to set up my unborn son with Nick Yadanza's recently born child. So I think that like there's enough podcaster-based stuff out there in the universe that we might not need to pit ourselves against each other. Make love, not war.
No, I'm shipping that.
I think what you guys should do is do a brand deal of a Survivor podcaster's year. So it would be Mike Bloom's podcasting year versus Shannon Gates' podcasting year.
That might be a stretch even for me, and that might just be saying something.
At this point, probably not, Mike, but... Yeah, there's no brand deal here. The thing that I found really interesting, and we're going to track a lot of things through 2018 Survivor, but... We have 100 contestants here, all up, and one of them is Russell Hance. And I had a really fun time digging through the data to just be like, how are people comparing Russell Hance to 99 first-time players? Like, this is an impossible task. I just thought it was hilarious.
Yes, yeah, so to sort of give an overview as to what we're about to get into. So we, a short time ago, distributed a survey that asked some wrap-up questions for the entirety of 2018 in Survivor. Special thanks to Taryn Armstrong. Not only did we shamelessly copied this idea from the podcast that him and Melissa Denny and Brent Wolgamott did several weeks ago about Big Brother in 2018, but he was also nice enough to help set up the survey for me as well. But we had a bunch of people, listeners that are hopefully listening to this right now, respond to it. We gave our own responses. So basically what this podcast is going to entail is that we're going to sort of talk through the survey, you know, question by question, that sort of gives a general overview as to the year, the seasons, the players, the winners, etc., and just, you know, try to put a point on 2018 before we move succinctly into 2019. That being said, we are going to spoil the bejesus out of all five of these seasons, domestic and international. So if you don't want to know specific outcomes or specific events that occur in seasons, maybe you haven't seen all the international seasons, maybe there's one specific season you haven't watched, this is where we leave you, unfortunately. We are going to get into all the nitty-gritty that goes on in these five seasons, and I don't want to, you know, accidentally spoil you on something that you don't want to watch. So if you've seen them all, or if you're fine being spoiled on how some of these seasons you didn't watch turned out, which you should watch them anyway because they're all fantastic, tune out here and we'll catch you back in 2019 for whatever may come in the future of Survivor.
But also slide into my DMs. I will help you watch them, and then you will come back to this podcast.
Yes, reach out to Shannon.
Sorry, I'm still stuck on the fact that 1% of the people who played Survivor this year were Russell Hance.
I know, but it's like a fever dream. Like, crazy. It didn't happen.
But there is something poetic. Yeah, yes, exactly. Oh my gosh. Okay, sorry, two thoughts. Okay, first thought is it's so poetic that 100 people played Survivor this year. Something about that number just makes me happy. Two, there were so many moments going back and rethinking about these seasons that totally felt like fever dreams. And I can't wait to get into all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's going to be, there's a lot of really fun stuff. And especially, I think we just sort of, I don't know, we were exponentially blessed to have a wealth of moments to the point where I forgot about so much until I pontificated on it, especially stuff that happened in the beginning, middle of the year, just because this end of the year has been so David versus Goliath heavy, for example, that there was so much other great stuff going on in those four seasons that I'm excited to talk about it all on the whole.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Well, before we get into the data, like, we're obviously going to talk it through. Obviously, there was a bit of a skew towards the US seasons because a lot of the respondents had only seen those two seasons. So we're going to try and work it out in a way that's fair, looking at all the seasons pretty objectively and also giving our completely subjective opinions. So let's get into it.
But who's to say Survivor is fair? You know, it's just like a survey.
Also, I meant to say that this entire podcast is arbitrary and reductive. I have to get that out there.
Yes, we're doing a lot of ranking. So, Stephen Fishback, I'm sorry. You're going to have to sign off here. I'm not even asking you to. I'm mandating that you turn off right now just to avoid any angry tweets that might be coming our way.
Oh, good thing. He was definitely listening.
Well, let's get into it. Let's start this whole shebang off because we've got a lot of great stuff to talk about. And let's start off with our general thoughts. And this will sort of be couched in the very first question that we sent out to our listeners, which is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate 2018 in Survivor? And so the way this is going to work is we're going to go around the horn and give our own answers to these questions, give a little bit of our basis behind them, and then we can sort of go to the data of what you guys out there had to say. But Liana, let's start with you. Give me your overall thoughts on Survivor in 2018 and the rating therein.
Okay, so the score that I gave was an 8 overall. I think for me, you know, if it's going to be a 10, it's got to be 5 seasons that are all, you know, Kagyan, David versus Goliath level sort of seasons. And I felt like Ghost Island, there were maybe some missteps where the quality in some seasons wasn't as great as others. That being said, all around, I was so happy with the quality that was put out this year from both the US and especially the international versions, because New Zealand, South Africa, and Australia all aired sort of back to back to back. And after the mess that was Ghost Island, these three were just such a breath of fresh air. And it was so nice to listen to them. And I was like, oh my gosh, there is no way this US season of Survivor is going to come close to these amazing three seasons of International Survivor. And I was proven wrong. David versus Goliath, not to spoil my rankings, but was just a great season and I thought the best of the year.
What do you think, Shannon?
Yeah, I gave it a 9. It all kind of comes to Ghost Island for me because I think that it all is because either you watched fewer seasons. So if you only watch the US seasons, then Ghost Island's like a bigger part of your 2018, like a bigger slice of the pie. So obviously that might take it down. But if you watch 5 seasons, it becomes, especially because it was the first season, like it seems so long ago to me. I'm just like hyped up on Survivor. Also, I guess it's about how bad you think Ghost Island was. Like if you think it was a really bottom tier season, that might take it down. For me, it's like it wasn't great, but there was still some stuff there. So, I mean, you couldn't really ask for much more. Obviously, Ghost Island could have been better, but I still think a 9 is where I'm at.
Yeah, I was really veering between 8 and 9 personally. I ended up going with 8 just because I do agree that I think the Ghost Island, the big thorn in the paw is that post-merge section, basically between Libby going home and Kellen going home, or you could even say Libby going home and the final vote, essentially, where there's a lot of stuff that I'm sure we'll get into in terms of maybe some downsides when it came to storytelling, casting, strategy, etc. And that alone,
Ghost Island is like the black sheep of this podcast.
Well, I mean, it unfortunately, and I think there was some redeeming stuff that I'm sure we're going to get into, but I think it also just happened to fall into a year where there was so much great stuff out there and so many differing things as well. Like you have the, I would say like reliability, the just a very solid season in Survivor New Zealand. You have a wackadoo season in Survivor South Africa. You have, you know, a very up and down season, a very like swinging back and forth season in Australia and Survivor. And you sort of mix it all together and you get David versus Goliath as well. So it really has sort of built to a fever pitch for those other four. The other thing that sort of takes it down for me, and not to get too much into my season rankings, there were certain elements of other seasons that I wasn't a huge fan of outside of Ghost Island. Like I wasn't a huge fan of the pre-merge of Australian Survivor as an example. So that sort of like took it down another step for me. But it's still great. I mean, especially if you compare it to like 2017 in Survivor, which I would give maybe like a 5 or 6 at the most, where basically that's entirely buoyed by Australian Survivor 2017. Everything else is unfortunately not really that much to write home about. This is just an immense improvement. Do we have any ideas as to what that might have been? Do we think it was just extenuating circumstances that happened to provide us with at least 4 really good Survivor seasons this year?
Well, I think each thing is individual. I mean, New Zealand, I think, took a lot of the criticism on board and it was just like such a vast improvement. South Africa kind of came back in this rebooted style, and it's doing some great things with some really, really great people behind it. So if it had existed in 2017, I feel like I'm very, very confident in the product that they can put out. David versus Goliath just came out of nowhere. Like, I don't know how we had the seasons that we did, and then David versus Goliath was so good. I don't really feel like the US listens to a lot of us. So I don't know. It just came out of nowhere. But thank you for that. And I do hope that it will continue into the next couple of seasons.
I think for me, I think about, okay, what is it that makes a good season of Survivor? And the, you know, some of it has to do with the format. I think the location can sometimes influence the season, but the outstanding factor for me is always the cast. And that was what happened when I looked back at the casts for South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, David versus Goliath, Australia specifically for me. There were a lot of players that just, I wanted to see what happened next. And so, you know, you can talk about New Zealand with, oh, now they did the Outcast twist, or I don't even remember the format of David versus Goliath. If I'm being 100% honest, there are any twists, I don't know. I don't remember them. But what I remember is the people. And I think that's what made so many strong seasons is the casts and just having people on my television screen that I wanted to watch. And I wanted to see what happened to them in the following weeks of the show.
So
yeah, I totally agree, especially for South Africa and David versus Goliath, like hit it out the park with their cast. I realized yesterday that B is the Stacey Lee of David versus Goliath. Otherwise,
Stacey B.
Brilliant cast. Yes. Yeah. And someone said in their answers of what they're going to remember, someone said Stacey Lee. So I feel like I've got that notoriety.
I think you basically were like the Survivor historian's like gene of it all, where you made her so prominent for not being prominent that she's now prominent, if that makes sense. And
after John went on about her, people were messaging me like, do you feel bad? But I'm like, well, did I lie? Like, was she good casting?
Yeah, I'm all here for Stacey B, personally. I feel like that's a thing I can get on board with.
So it's like the new Ashby line, right? It's,
yeah.
You know, it's similar. It's on the same vein.
So the audience seemed to be in general agreement with us. They ranked the season, basically it turned out to be 8.13, I believe was the weighted average. If you round that down, somewhere between, you know, 8 and 9. The lion's share seemed to be in that 8 to 9 range. So it seems like we're sort of all in agreement, like, there obviously are sticking points, as there are going to be when you have five seasons to talk about, but overall, a really, really fun year of Survivor. And I'm excited to get into some more granular elements as we move down the pyramid here. Let's talk about these seasons. Now we can sort of separate things a bit from this overall consensus. And the next question we asked was, rank the 2018 Survivor seasons from best to worst. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go around the horn, but to build some nice suspense in true Survivor style, Shannon, can you give me your list from 5 to 1? And along the way, we also did ask people if they wanted to rate each season on a scale from 1 to 10. So if you want to give that as well.
Okay, you just said way too many numbers and it's way too early in the morning, but I'm going to try and follow what you just said. So my worst season was Ghost Island. I gave that a 5. I don't know. I still think there was stuff there. The tie was fun. Chris Noble was fun. I like Dom and Wendell. That's a 5 for me. Australia, I did next. I gave it a 7. New Zealand, I gave an 8. That was like right in the middle. And then South Africa and David versus Goliath, both gave a 10 too. But I put South Africa first, David versus Goliath second. I think that's probably what my most contentious ranking is of these 5. Yeah, to me, South Africa always deserved the Kageyan comparisons, where I felt like David versus Goliath wasn't quite there. As I said, both had incredible casts, but, you know, I guess the weak spots of each season was South Africa in the mid-merge maybe had a couple of episodes where it was kind of like falling through the pogonging, but David versus Goliath to me didn't finish as strong. South Africa had that like crazy winner, some crazy moves and blindsides at the end where we really didn't know what was going to happen and we were all completely shocked. Yeah, that's why I had those 5.
All right, Liana, what'd you do?
Okay, surprise to no one, Ghost Island in 5th place with a score of 4 because it wasn't complete garbage, but it wasn't great. then I had Mike, because you said too many things. I'm with Shannon on this one.
I completely agree.
4th place, I had Australian Survivor, and I gave that a 6/7 because I was being a fencer-tin. Wait, am I
these are all so arbitrary and reductive. Like, speaking of just give like a number rating.
I don't freaking know. And I think for that, it goes to why I put it here, why it was worse because of the pre-merge. So I remember I was behind on AU and then I sort of like caught up. So I watched a lot of those episodes actually really quickly, just sort of binging them, I think, while I was probably doing something else. And so that's why when I first came to season, I was like, oh my God, I love this season. It was so good. And then I remembered how boring those like first 6-7 episodes were, but I just, you know, wasn't super paying attention, so that's why it falls lower for me. Then next I had New Zealand and I gave that an 8. And then I had, because solid gameplay, wait, are we supposed to talk about each season? Is that allowed? Okay. So, oh my God, I just feel like there's so many words coming out of my mouth right now and there's no discussion. Okay, I'll just quickly say for New Zealand I put it as an 8. I put it solidly in the middle. I thought that there were fun characters and fun gameplay, but there wasn't anything that was like, oh my gosh, wow, crazy. Like, this is standing out to me, apart from an incredible winner, which we'll talk about later. Then I also was in a similar boat as Shannon, where I was kind of sort of going back and forth between South Africa and David versus Goliath. I did end up putting South Africa in my second slot, even though I gave both South Africa and David versus Goliath a 9, because I think I sort of, with South Africa, there was the little bit that was sort of boring in the middle. But yeah, the craziness at the end really put it over the top. And I think for me with South Africa, there were so many characters I really cared about. And David versus Goliath, that was also the case. But towards the end, I think I had less of an involvement personally. Also, David versus Goliath, you know, was one that we did for the B&B. And so I think that's a bias that makes it stand out in my mind. So that was my ranking. 1, David versus Goliath. 2, South Africa. New Zealand, AU, Ghost Island.
Yeah, I try to be conscious of my South Africa bias, but like, I just love the season so much. I feel like it's not a bias. It was just amazing.
The B&B bias is real. I'm here for it. So I'll
Stacy B&B. Are you going to change that to the name? I'd be offended if you don't.
If I call it the Stacy B&B.
I think that there's some marketing you can do to that.
There's no marketing to be done with that whatsoever.
It's really early. I like Stacey B&B.
All right, we'll workshop it. Maybe we'll put on another survey to see if we should rename the B&B podcast the Stacey B&B.
Please stop offering surveys. So much work.
All right, well, I'll do mine here. So number 5, yeah, I put Ghost Island down here too. I went with a 4. So I like the cast, I think, more than most. And I thought the pre-merge actually did a pretty good job of giving everyone a story, even people like Libby and Jenna and Desiree, like, got at least some inkling of a story that just got, unfortunately, completely erased once the merge came around. It just felt
Wait, what was Chelsea's story?
She was sitting.
Ah, yeah.
But basically, the post-merge was, unfortunately, sort of like a different story, where there were 13 people, and I would say maybe, like, 6 of them really got, you know, stuff dedicated to them. I thought Ghost Island was an interesting concept in itself, but there was too much Calvin ball going on with, like, we didn't really know the rules, and there was a bit of headaches with, like, okay, Kellen has the vote, the extra vote, but Dominic has a fake idol and a real idol and another fake idol and the legacy advantage, but it still culminated in probably the most exciting, you know, finish in Survivor history. Next, I put Australian Survivor. I gave that one a 6, too. I really loved the first 2 episodes. Just watching Matt and Russell completely implode, you know, within their own respective first tribal councils, even though it wasn't Russell's first tribal council by any stretch of the imagination, was really exciting and really cool. It made me think, like, okay, we can pick up from the insanity that was Australian Survivor 2017. And I think that there were some really great sort of passing of the baton of power come the post-merge that led to this really strong, you know, sequence of blindsides. My big sticking point for Australian Survivor was the editing. I know we talked about this in our final podcast, Shannon, with the two of us and Nick, but I do not think it was very good editing. I think repeating the same confessionals over and over again, the fact that Benji, who, spoiler, is going to be a big part of our questions from now on, didn't get a confessional until like episode 7 is pretty ridiculous.
And then got like 99 in the next
episode. Yeah, but they were all the same thing, all the same analogies.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have, you know, I know it's a game point for Shannon and someone like Monica, who made it to 5th place and was a pretty pivotal.
Oh, we're going to talk about Monica.
Yeah, didn't get any confessionals at all. So that definitely brought it down for me, but I gave it a 6 overall. 3rd place was New Zealand. I sort of had the same logic as Liana, but it was just a really solid season where there's a lot of good stuff going on. There were only a couple things that made me, you know, had my jaw drop, but nothing as extremely crazy and entertaining as the stuff from my top two seasons. And just like you guys, I was going back and forth here. I did give both seasons a 10, just because, like, when I look back on them, they are just such pristine Survivor products that there are foibles with them, but there's foibles in every season. Pearl Islands is one of my favorite seasons, and even they sort of have one or two boring moments. But I ended up putting South Africa number one, because I thought David versus Goliath had this fantastic level of storytelling and editing and compelling characters, big moments and lots of comedy. But South Africa had that on top of just a wackadoo winner. And I think that the only way that David versus Goliath suffers for me is that I'm still not a huge fan of the end game of, like, the going from six down to three, the fire making, etc. Whereas the South Africa, we had our final five round where something went crazy. We had our final four round where something really went crazy. And then it culminated in my opinion, the most unlikely Survivor winner in the history of the franchise. And so I really have to, like, put a crown on top of that and just have it squeak out to be my number one personally.
I think for me, the thing about South Africa that maybe drops it a little bit is just because there were a lot of, like, 6-2, 5-2, 5-1 votes that were sort of going on. And so maybe, like, that stood out to me. But I definitely get both of your points about the end game, because I sort of forgot about that with David versus Goliath, especially because it's all just condensed, you know, into one big episode, and you just sort of rush through it. Whereas with South Africa, we really got to see each vote, you know, at the final five, at the final four. And that was, like, really exciting to be able to see all of that insanity out and play out. But yes, both such good seasons.
Yeah, I do think it speaks to the excellence of both seasons that we're really trying to find, like, any flaws with either one to try and rank them. This is, like, the Dom and Wendell of seasons, South Africa and David versus Goliath, because, like, we're just looking at tiny moments. For South Africa, maybe the PK boot episode was a little ho-hum. For David versus Goliath, maybe the end game could have been slightly more exciting. There was still some fun stuff there. Like, when we look at Australia, like, pretty much the whole pre-merge was, as you said, kind of boring. Well, and that was a lot of episodes.
So. Well, and also what I looked to with some of these was I was thinking back on the seasons of, were there any episodes where there was, like, nothing to do? And I feel like with both David versus Goliath and South Africa, even if the boots were a little foregone, there were still things going on. Like, Shannon, I remember distinctly at the end of our South Africa coverage, we went through each episode and talked about at least one or two moments that happened. And I think that's the hallmark.
That does sound like something we would do.
Yes, absolutely. And that sounds, but that's the hallmark of a great Survivor season, is that even in episodes where the boot is pretty much out there from minute one, if you still have character-based, fun, strategic moments that keep your attention buoyed for the next 40-something minutes, that's a hallmark of a good season, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's all casting and editing. And David versus Goliath in South Africa, I feel like for anyone who watched all of them, I don't see how they cannot be the top two. Like, they just had so much brilliance there in absolute spades. So, I mean, just looking at the survey, I think it really speaks as well, too, because, as I said, there's a skew to the US bias based on the responses that we got. And even so, David versus Goliath was strongly ahead, like, very much so, but I still feel like there's that bit of that bias there. South Africa was still next despite the bias, then Australia, then New Zealand, and then Ghost Island, despite the fact that about half of our respondents probably had only watched Ghost Island, David versus Goliath, was still last.
Yeah,
and so bad.
It was that bad.
I mean, it was given a 5. It wasn't given a rating of a 1. So again, I think people sort of agree with us that there are redeeming qualities. But yeah, I think considering that I believe David versus Goliath weighted like an average of 9, I think that's definitely a disparity. And everything else sort of fell in the 6-7 range.
Poor Ghost Island. It's like the black sheep of this year's Survivor.
Well, yeah, I think as well, like, New Zealand suffers a bit from less viewership there. Australia gets ahead of New Zealand. New Zealand, South Africa were the two, I think, that were the least watched. So as we said, I don't think we spoiled a lot. So you still have some time to DM people.
That's an interesting thing, because I do want to, before we move on, I do want to sort of speak about that, just that it seems like from what we were viewing, because I was intrigued as to, like, how much Survivor everyone had watched. And it seems like by far the most people of our listeners had watched both US seasons. And then I would say maybe Australia might be second most. Then New Zealand, then South Africa. And I guess my theory behind why South Africa was the least watched of all Survivor seasons this year was because, A, it was coming back after a couple of years. I think New Zealand and Australia both benefited from having seasons the prior year, in Australia's case, the year before that as well. So it has sort of had brand recognition that people could come back to. And B, I mean, it came back, you know, right after Ghost Island had finished. It was sort of filling that summer slot that New Zealand already did and Australian Survivor was about to do as well. So I think if you were sort of juggling your priorities, as one does when they're busy, it might have come as a difficult time, which is a shame because, again, it was my favorite season of the year.
Mm-hmm. Hey, it's still there to be watched. So
there's still time.
Yeah, slip into Shannon's DMs. She's inviting you.
I mean, if you enjoyed David versus Goliath, the fact that I think all three of us are really struggling with how to rank them just, yeah, speaks to how good it was.
Well, speaking of rankings, let's move on to our next one. We ranked the seasons last. Let's rank the people who became victorious from said seasons. Let's talk about the winner rankings and the ratings that we gave them. So just to review here, we're going to go from the bottom up, so your least favorite winner and what you rated them as on a scale of 1 to 10. And then we're going to go number 4 and then 3, 2, 1.
That makes sense? It feels like you're actively trying to confuse us. Let's get Jordan Kalish. Yeah, he will explain what we're meant to be doing.
Yeah, thank you to Jordan Kalish for doing the math on this. I don't know why you gave Ghost Island a rating of pizza, but I guess we'll assume that's some sort of number that's close to a 7. Shannon, let's start with you. Why don't you go through your winner list bottom up?
Okay, so I ranked Tom last. He is the Ghost Island of winners. I gave him a 3, which I feel like was pretty generous, but like you got to do some stuff to win. He did have a good final tribal speech. Did, I think, play the goat game pretty well. He knew he was a goat. He was being dragged. He took out Verna when he eventually did need to. There was some stuff there, but yeah, 3 again might be a bit generous. Shane was next. They gave her a 6. It's hard to win a 50-day game, and she did a lot there, but I don't really think she compares to the top 3 winners that I had. I had Nick next with an 8, and I gave Wendell and Lisa both a 9, but I put Wendell first.
Okay. Any reasoning behind that?
Wendell, I just feel like, had like a particularly dominant game, and we'll definitely get into Wendell, Lisa, and Nick a lot when we get into our best players of the year because they all make my top 10. Shane and Tom, spoiler, do not. Shane, I don't have a lot of Australian players in my top 10, and I probably wouldn't put Shane in my top Australian players. So for me, she just falls down a bit there. Tom is an actively bad Survivor player, so that's why he didn't make my top 10. And yeah, I think I'll get into it when I talk about each player in like the best of list. But Wendell and Lisa, I think, both played such excellent games. And Nick is a great winner too, but just not at that level.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I had similar feelings on Tom. I gave him a 2. Because I thought that that's what he deserved. Not that it was not fun to watch him win, but what did Tom do to get to the end? A 2's worth in points. I had Shane next. I gave her a 5. I felt like there was also a little bit, I think you guys made this analogy of like your grandma playing Survivor, and like she's out there and she's trying, but it didn't really come across to me that there was a whole lot of really strong proactive gameplay that was happening.
Now I'm just imagining you say that to your grandma if she ever played Survivor. Like, grandma, you did well, but I needed more proactive gameplay from you.
I felt like it was too passive, grandma.
Do better, grandma.
Do better next time when you're
when you return.
Returning player season. I gave Nick a 6 because I felt that, you know, him and Shane, I thought, were relatively similar, although I felt that there was more aggressive gameplay behavior, which I like to see in a winner coming from Nick. Although I don't know, we can talk about the editing of between him and Davey later. So I gave him a 6. Wendell, I had at an 8. I think, you know, he played a super strong game between him and Dominic, just being able to really maintain control over the votes, I thought was super impressive. But I had Lisa ranked as number 1. I gave her a 9. I will be the first to admit it. I was not the biggest Lisa fan when I started watching New Zealand. I was like, oh, looky here. Another one of those nerdy super fans that thinks that they're going to. And then no.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, you've just alienated our entire listener base. No.
Like, I'm a self-hating super fan. So like when I see other super fans, like, you know, I'm like, oh, this is a person who thinks they know everything. So impressed. So incredibly impressed with Lisa, and I will be the first to eat crow on my initial impressions of her. Like, I will be her biggest stan, because once I really started looking at her game as a whole, I realized what a masterful game she was able to play, and that's why I had her as my first rank for winner.
It's really hard to rank people who are such different archetypes, like Wendell and Lisa. Lisa came out then, like, she had these really specific intentions when I talked to her in my deep dive, and she was talking about basically what she went out there trying to achieve, and she just completely achieved all of that. Yeah. For her archetype, she played the perfect game. Like, I don't know how it can get much better.
Yes, exactly. And I think like that's why I was so excited about her, because, you know, I think to see somebody like go out there and to be able to really execute everything that you wanted to do. And I think to be able to do it, so in my opinion, flawlessly the way she did was it was just fun.
I do want to say that maybe the hottest take out of that entire ranking was you sort of conflating Nick with Shane, because I never heard that comparison before. So I'm super intrigued about it.
Well, okay, so I guess the comparison that I see is, you know, Shane was playing the game early, and I think Nick was sort of playing the game early, but, you know, it didn't feel as, like, they were both really trying, and I believe in them for trying, but sometimes it felt like it was a little misdirected. What? Am I saying blasphemous things?
No, just like, grandma, I believe in you for trying, but do better.
When my grandma and Nick Wilson play Survivor together, they're both going to try really
as
hard.
The two captains of the upcoming season.
Yeah, but I think, you know, they had like misplayed idols, and I think they sort of stumbled a little bit. They were able to benefit from the strength of an ally. For Shane, it was Sharn. For Nick, it was Davey. And so I think that there are some interesting parallels between their game now that I start to lay it out.
I love that.
Welcome to this podcast where we somehow were comparing Nick and Shane, and it's actually a really interesting comparison. So this is the kind of content you're getting here.
So I'll do mine. Obviously, Tom's at the bottom, and I don't know about you guys. I purely went by gameplay for this. We'll get into favorite players, which I think is more incorporating characters, because if it was characters, Tom is far and away number one in terms of winners. But I mean, the fact that he was nearly voted out twice at the pre-merge, multiple times, depending on, you know, how many times his tribe might have thrown challenges to go to tribal council. And he was basically drawing dead until like maybe the final five. And then from there, which arguably might be the most important part of the game, he did turn it on and was able to make a couple of moves coupled with a whopper of a final tribal council speech paired with a subsequent flaming out of his final two partner. But considering that, like, outside of those three episodes we saw, there wasn't that much there in terms of strategy, outside of maybe the merge episode, earned him a 3 in my book. Shane was up next for me as well. I gave her a 5. I see what you're talking about, Liana, with the Nick comparisons, because early on in the game, I mean, Shane was kind of a hot mess herself, what with looking for the idol in front of everybody and basically mm-hmm. getting forced to play it at the Moana vote. It wasn't until at the swap when she happened to get recruited as a spy by Matt Rogers that I feel like her game ticked up a notch. You know, she was sort of left out of a couple of votes with Matt, with, you know, the commando going home, but you know, she was able to recover a bit due to Sharn's work, due to a bit of her work as well. She was almost voted out a couple times, and I did think she put together a much better jury performance than her opponent. I'm pretty sure she won the jury vote in that final tribal council, so I can't mm-hmm. knock her too much. Nick was next for me. It was really tough to discern Nick and Wendell, in my opinion, because I feel like both of them sort of had differing strengths in the game, but they both played pretty solid games. But I ended up going with Nick here. The social game was absolutely on lock. I know he was left out of a couple of votes. I personally subscribe to the philosophy that he didn't necessarily need to win those immunity challenges at the end, that he was pretty much locked in with Mike and Angelina, that I don't know if they would necessarily want to take anyone else besides him. The thing about these top three winners as well is I feel like they each, between Nick, Wendell, and Lisa, orchestrated at least one big, chaotic, complicated, fun move that just shows how good of a gamer they are. So for Nick, that was, of course, the John Blind side, the first time that a minority was able to split votes and successfully send someone home. Wendell, I also put as an 8. I think his big move was the double tribal council when he was able to turn Laurel and Kellen against each other to not only flush Kellen's extra vote, but make sure that Laurel never works with them again. Per Diem, who's a fantastic Survivor YouTuber, basically has an entire video about it where it's ranked in his like top tribal council moments. It's just so complicated, so small, but it just speaks volumes about the social clout that Wendell had. Though he does get docked a couple points in my book because, I mean, he did almost lose the game, and he was targeted a couple times. And I'm totally with you, Liana. I put Lisa as number 1 with 9, just because she had a pulse on literally every vote that was going on in the course of the game. And she was never targeted until the final five, when Vindictive Adam was like, okay, now I need to get rid of Lisa. Arguably, maybe her biggest foible was that she bungled the extra vote and that JT immediately sussed her out. But outside of that, I mean, it just felt like she was so good, so understated. I still cannot get over how well that 3-2-1 move worked out, especially considering that she got someone to vote out their friend, someone that they knew outside of the game, and Flesh and Idol. It was insurmountable. And people might say, oh, yeah, you know, she nearly lost to Tess. But as far as I'm concerned, she walked in there with 3 votes against her anyway. And the fact that she was able to keep it at a 4-3 speaks volumes as to just how good she was as a player. So those were my rankings.
Yeah, that move at the final 6 is definitely in the conversation for best move of the year, which is actually not a question we have on the survey. But I think it's really interesting, Nick. You might have him similar to Wendell, and Liana has him similar to Shane. Like, that's a really big disparity. For me, Wendell's way stronger than Nick. Like, he played a much, much more dominant game, and Nick had more flaws, while I did, you know, like certain aspects of his game. And to me, Nick had so much more of a pulse on the game than Shane. He was innovating it in ways that Shane wasn't. He pulled off moves that were first-time moves that we'll definitely talk about, that I just think is, like, a big disparity from Shane. So I have him in the middle, but I think that in terms of, like, our 3 opinions of Nick, especially coming off David versus Goliath so recently, that I think there's probably a very diverse school of thought on his win.
Yeah.
I think, well, might have some of that disparity might be due to the fact that, like, I like Shane, and Don't F with Shane Gould is just stuck in my head, and so I can't help but be like, yeah, girl, you go, Shane! And so there's a little bit of that going on. So I don't want to, you know, disparage Nick too much as a winner, because I do think he did play a good game. But I do have him, you know, closer to Shane in my personal rankings than Mike.
Yeah, I think for
me, even though I did put Wendell first, I do think that Lisa, she's a great first pick as well. I mean, I gave them both a 9. They're both brilliant.
And for me, it was a matter of, like, do I balance the fact that Wendell was dominant but very out front and could have, in a bunch of tribal councils, actually have gone home had, you know, things actually been pulled together, versus someone like Nick, who really wasn't getting targeted at all until maybe you could argue again the final 5 where he had to win out.
Or
again,
episode 1.
Yeah, or episode 1, which again I think has been the most widely discussed thing in these postseason things as to, like, you know, Christian said in his interview that Nick was definitely going. Nick felt like, you know, Pat's name was going around. Gabby said that Carl's name was going around. So that will forever remain one of the greatest Survivor mysteries. But episode 1 aside, I really do feel like Nick did a good job of not being detected while still making moves at the same time. But I do agree that there were still some flaws in there, like there are with every winner. You know, his specific emotional handlings of those blindsides he was left out of, I think, rubbed some people the wrong way, especially people like Allison and Kara, who not only commented on it, but ended up being 2 of the votes against Nick in the final tribal council. So not to say that any of them are perfect players. I think Lisa might be the most perfect player. And I tweeted this out. I still think, far and above, she's the best international player that I have seen thus far in my years of watching International Survivor.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a big call. We're going to get into that in the best 10 players, I think.
So I think that this is really interesting, this idea of, okay, so somebody who is out in front and who was a target versus being able to make moves behind the scenes, because I think about, you know, okay, are they behind the scenes because they're actually behind the scenes and they're making moves, or are they under the radar because, you know, nobody considers them a threat, they're able to get out the threats, and then, oh, they're the best person left. And so, you know, like, what does that really make them a strong player? Like, for example, you can have somebody who is playing an okay game, but then is able to take out the people who are sort of one step ahead of them. And then, you know, they're able to eventually get to the end. Does that make them the better player because they were able to get out those people? I don't know. I think it's a lot harder to stay out in front and, like, maintain that dominant control over everything. Just because I think that there were a lot of inner workings in Ghost Island or in David versus Goliath that maybe we didn't necessarily see because of the editing. But I think that's it's a tough call.
Yeah, and I think that,
I mean, like, Wendell was out in front, and then, but he was blindsided, you know, in the third vote, and then otherwise had so much control. For me, Nick was blindsided at 9. He was blindsided at 6. Like, yes, he wasn't the one being targeted, but that's some pretty big holes in your strategy when you don't know who's going home at the final 6. It's very late for me.
Yeah, and I do wonder, to your point, Liana, is editing sort of impacting things as well? Because I think we'll get into the way the audience rates things, but they rated Wendell and Nick both very closely. And I wonder if maybe one of the reasons why Nick's game in particular is a bit burgeoned is because not only of the recency bias, but the fact that the edit was having him be the narrator behind a lot of what was going on strategically, because he's well-spoken. And as a result, I think you sort of associate strategic clout with the words that someone is saying, even if there are things going on behind the scenes which we don't see and which we can't really base our opinions off of, that might be saying the opposite.
And that's what's hard, you know, when something is just reductive, you know, it's really difficult to make those calls.
Well, Nick's game was just, there were so many highs and so many lows. And I think a lot of it is just what you look back on. Like, if you're going to look back and say, oh my God, he was blindsided there, like, that's a hole. But then you can look back on, like, some really flashy moves. I think Christian described it on his deep dive when he made it, like, you know, a graph. And he said, you know, no one got higher than Nick. Like, some of those moves he was doing, the minority vote split was one of the best things I saw all year. Like, I absolutely love that. And then there were the big blindsides. So I think that's why his game's particularly hard to rank, because you start looking at, well, what do I value? It's like, well, do you value the fact that he was innovating the game, controlling a lot? Do you value the fact that he was left out of some things? Do you put it somewhere in the middle, which I think is kind of what I did. And I think there's where that maybe that disparity comes from.
Yeah, the weird thing is, yeah, I think we all sort of ended up putting him in the middle just sort of by default, because I totally agree. I guess I had sort of based my analysis of him more on the highs, because I think the highs were what got him the win in the end, to the point where I'm pretty sure walking to that tribal council, I think there's shy of him essentially pulling down his pants and mooning the entire jury and having his butt talk his jury speech for him. I think he pretty much has the game on lock. And I think that that's a hallmark of someone who at least played a pretty strong game. But I ended up ranking Wendell ahead of him just because I think that while Nick had higher highs, Wendell had the more consistent line going on the graph.
See, it all comes back to math. We just got to assign points and average it out and we'll figure it out. No,
I was absolutely not told how much math would be in this podcast before I was agreed to do it.
No, I mean, I think it definitely does go to, you know, what do you value? Do you value somebody that is able to maintain a super dominant game, someone who's able to play behind the scenes, somebody who wins immunities versus, you know, being able to really be a master of the social game versus, you know, the types of moves, how many moves? It gets so complicated. It really just goes down to, look, I like this person for this reason, and this is why I put them first. So I don't think there's any wrong rankings here, unless you put Stacey Lee first.
Someone probably did.
I wonder if we can see if anybody put her as one.
Let me talk through how the audience ranked these winners. So I feel like they sort of actually clumped them into two groups here, where Tom and Shane were both on the bottom. Tom was ranked number 5 with an average of 5.42. Shane was second from
the
bottom.
Super generous.
Yeah, pretty generous. I do feel like maybe people were either including the character aspect of it in there, or they were talking about sort of the late game run he had, where essentially he helped get rid of Werner. You know, he was the one who ratted out Katinka to get rid of Katinka. Like, he had a couple moves that he could, you know, give credit to himself. And he did have that final tribal council speech where he was the tall tree catching wind. And then Shane was right above him at 5.78. The other three are sort of grouped in the sevens and actually are pretty close together. So Lisa was third. She got a weighted average of 7.48. Then Nick with an average of 7.55. And then finally, Wendell got an average of 7.9, so about 8. But everything else, those three basically lived in like the 7 to 8 range. And I sort of think that all of our consensus rankings are that there's a pretty clear delineation between Tom and Shane and then the other three. Though in Liana's opinion, I think it's more so Tom, Shane, and Nick, and then the other two.
But Lisa suffers from lower viewership in this, I think, as well.
Yeah, I think that was my biggest takeaway from this, was that, you know, this is definitely the result of less people having seen that season. And if you haven't seen New Zealand, you don't know what an amazing game she played. So you should go watch it. Spoiler alert.
All right. Well, let's get into some really fun stuff. Let's start mashing all of these people together. I want to talk about what the consensus 10 best players from this year were. Liana, give me your thoughts as to who you thought the 10 best players of this year were.
But just my list? Or should I just talk about people?
Yeah, I mean, you could do whatever you want to. I'm sure both will come out.
Okay. I can do whatever I want. Okay, cool.
This question is a lot.
This is a lot. Okay, I think the first thing I want to start with is I just want to talk about what the viewers responded with, because I think there were two people that stood out sort of regardless of how you weighted the data. So I did some data analysis to try to figure out, okay, if you maybe hadn't seen the international seasons, how might the rankings of these players fall out? And Wendell and Dominic were pretty much neck and neck, ranked the best players of this year in Survivor. And I think that that is fitting. I mean, I think that you have Wendell, who played a really strong game, and then Dominic, who is pretty much side by side with him. I mean, the game resulted in a freaking tie. Like, it's unsurprising that these two, according to the viewers, are neck and neck as well. I think then for me, you know, I had the two of them definitely on my top 10 list. I had, and this may this shouldn't be a surprise, but I had Lisa above the two of them because I thought that she overall played a stronger game. But I had Lisa, Wendell, and Dom as sort of a clear top three for me in terms of best players from 2018.
Mm-hmm. Shannon, who topped your list?
So for me, I had Verna first, and I don't think it's close. I think that he did what Dom and Wendell did, but by himself. And I think that obviously with the fire making in a final three, like US Survivor has, he wins the game, but he doesn't get that luxury. Just such a comprehensive game that very few other people had this year. I mean, as we've said, we're talking about, I think, like a pretty obvious top four-ish. Well, I mean, I have Verna, Dom and Wendell next on my list in that order. And then Lisa, to me, that's a very, very clear top four with four very comprehensive games. But Verna, like, his game was flashy. He led this pogonging. Like, I just think his game was so brilliant. For me, he's absolutely first. And he also suffers, I think, in the survey from lower viewership. He ends up coming, I think, seventh in the survey. But then when you rank it based on his average place, he's the third best because he got an average ranking of 2.6 once you ranked him at all. So if you watched him, you probably put him in your top 10 and you probably put him very, very high in your top 10 because, you know, that's how great he did. A lot of people were putting him very much first if they were ranking him at all. So Verna was first for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to say my top four, Werner was the fourth one in my list. Yeah. So I think that's congruent.
Yeah.
That is the average weighting. That was the top four as well. And then quite a big drop off. So I think that if you watched all five seasons, those four seem to be kind of like in a league of their own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is the definitive Mount Rushmore of players in 2018, in my opinion, are Dom, Wendell, Lisa, and Werner, just because from a strategic perspective, they were able to pull off so many moves, achieve such dominance, in Lisa's perspective, dominance that like nobody was able to really notice, which again probably makes her my number one, in my opinion. The only reason why I would put Werner maybe number four out of those is because it seemed like from what we were gleaning, should he make it to the final two, there was a possibility that he would have lost. And again, I think
I don't believe that anymore, though. I feel like that was overblown because it felt like he was so obviously going to win, so they were like kind of making it a question mark. Like, who was he going to be sitting next to? Next to Annalise, he might have lost, but I don't see the two of them sitting there. He wasn't losing to Jean or Tom. Like, he had a good shot.
Yeah. I just think we'll never know, but I do think it's an interesting thing is, and you could ascribe blame as to the jury or to Werner himself if that did happen, but the possibility, and maybe that's me believing the edit being a bit too gullible, bumps it a bit down for me. Liana, what other players did you have that sort of filled out your top 10 or anyone else you want to talk about?
So some other people that I had pulled up, I'll just talk about this. So Davey, I want to talk about Davey because, I had to rewatch, the episodes of David versus Goliath in order to do the BNB. And I started to notice a lot of things, little things that Davey was doing that I thought really made him stand out compared to, Nick specifically, because Davey was he was the one that really tried to position himself in a specific way. He would let information go when he should. He was thinking really considerately about the Final Four deal that was being made. And I think that there was a lot of work that Davey was doing that really wasn't shown because, you know, he didn't end up making it all the way to the end. Like, I think if Davey had been in the place that Nick had been, in terms of making it to the final three, I think Davey definitely would have won. And I think that he would have, his edit would have been different. So he is somebody that was actually the only player on my top 10 list from David versus Goliath, you know, despite that being such a top season for me. Yeah, he was the only player that made my list. And I think that that's because I was really impressed with his gameplay and what I saw from him.
Where did you rank him?
He was eighth overall. So I had Palessa, Sharn, Annalise, Shawnee, and Matt Hancock were the other ones that sort of fill out the rest of my list. But I don't know. I had so many people. And sort of once I got past that like top four, I had so many people that I wanted to include and so many people I wanted to talk about. And those are sort of the ones that I pulled out. So I don't know if any of those stand out to you guys.
Can we drill down on the list a bit? Shawnee, you mean Shawnee from Survivor South Africa?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, what made you choose Shawnee?
I just thought that she had I don't know, maybe this is me conflating the fact that I liked her so much, but I thought that she was somebody who had a decent pulse on the social game, even though I think she was constantly put in situations that, you know, were not necessarily in her favor. But she was somebody who I really just was rooting for and really wanted to see again. And I think she has all of the pieces to make a really good Survivor player, but just ended up being put in sort of these awkward situations. I think where she really first stood out to me was in the very first vote to get Seamus out. Like, I'm pretty sure it was her that ended up doing a lot of the finagling mm-hmm. to get Seamus out in that first vote and then set up essentially the next like craziness that happened. So that was why she stood out to me as just somebody who I thought was a good player.
You know, maybe this will be easier if we sort of go through the seasons and talk about which players are in our top 10, because I think that we sort of come to this consensus for, but to Liana's point, there seems to be some people that might fall into various categories. So I guess we'll start with David versus Goliath. Liana, with Ghost Island, remind me which Ghost Island players were in your top 10 besides Dom and Wendell.
Dom and Wendell.
Yeah, same.
All right, call me a filthy casual here. I put Michael Yerger in my top 10.
And so did the survey. They had him at number 10.
And he would probably be at the bottom here, but it's because, I mean, I look to the bluff that he made with the double as the thing with Michael that's so interesting is that Michael was constantly playing from on the back foot. Like, it's hard to really judge his game when he was consistently in this underdog position, but I have to kind of commend him for it, where, you know, he made that bluff with the two idols and was able to, you know, I think had he pulled it off, had he played it on the right person, would have been momentous. He was able to avoid being the next targeted from that. You know, I think that him playing the idol on himself to get rid of Libby obviously saved him. And I think that him sort of going out at the split tribal council is sort of like something you can write off, or it was just unfortunate circumstances, because otherwise everyone else was sort of targeting each other. I think that Michael actually had a pretty good head on his shoulders when it came to figuring out when he was in trouble and acting upon that. And it just sort of ended up where the outs ran out. There were only 5 people voting at that tribal council. And as just sort of a result from the numbers, there weren't enough to keep him at that point.
Yeah, for me, I feel like Michael Yerger will do better things in Survivor than he did in Ghost Island. I assume he'll play again probably multiple times. Like, he played the underdog role really well. I definitely saw flashes of brilliance, but maybe it just was circumstance that he was kept down and didn't really have a lot of room to make a move. I just feel like there could be more there. Like, he's definitely in the conversation for me, but I wouldn't put him in my top 10.
I don't remember Ghost Island very well. So I'm looking back over this. Okay, so this is like slowly coming back to me. So here's what I remember thinking about Michael. I think that he's somebody who, yeah, has sort of that potential, because I think I just remember being so blown away that this kid was 18 years old and he was out there. He did not act or behave like an 18-year-old. And I think that then that sort of translates over into how you view him as a Survivor player, because I think you're like, oh, he's 18, you know, he's going to play the way an 18-year-old would play, but he definitely did not. And so that sort of exceeds expectations. And I think, you know, he had the correct idol play. He really does sort of get screwed over in that vote. I think that he was a decent player, but I think I may be just more excited to see what he would bring if he were to return.
Well, yeah. And just one funny thing while we're still talking about Ghost Island with Dom and Wendell. So initially we had it ranked by just how many votes people had got to be in the top 10 at all. And Dom was ranked as the best player of the year, slightly over Wendell. Then we weighted it to give more points if people obviously were ranked higher than, like, you know, number 1 versus number 8 or 9 or 10. And now Wendell is ranked before Dom. And it's like the fact that they flipped, like, these two are unrankable. Like, that's almost mm-hmm. the story of Ghost Island. There's nothing else about the fact that the jurors, Stephen Fishback, the survey, us, we can't rank this. But, like, I do give the edge, personally. I think I said at the finale podcast of Ghost Island, I personally give the edge to Dom. I feel like there was just a little bit more there strategically in 2 games with very, very few deficiencies. But I just love that the survey as well was confused about Dom and Wendell.
And that points towards, like, something pretty special, right? Like, you talk about all these other duos, like your Yule and Aussies, your JT and Stevens, even like your Spencer and Jeremy before the votes came in on that final tribal council, in terms of, like, these pairs where it's really tough to suss out who did what. But I think that this might be like the best Survivor twosome from a strategic perspective, considering that, yeah, to this day, people are still having trouble months later ranking who's a better player. And I just think that says something about how much they really filled in each other's blanks. It really was the yin and the yang that formed this really cohesive Survivor player. And as a result, it's kind of tough to suss out who's the better one to the point of where they were the only people so far to tie in a final vote. I love the poetic aspect of that.
Yeah, and when you're looking at those other games to compare, like your Yule and Aussie, you're comparing such two different things, and it's about what you value. You can do it as well with Michelle and Aubrey. There's a lot of duos throughout Survivor history where, you know, no matter what the opinions are, and even if the opinions are very split, they're two different games that you're looking at. Whereas Dom and Wendell, like, there's just in actually what they did, in their skills in the game, like, it's just so similar that, the survey couldn't rank them either. So funny.
Well, let's talk about Survivor New Zealand. Liana, you put Matt in there. Shannon, did you as well?
Yeah, I did. I have Matt. I think I ended up having him higher and then I moved him down a bit. But yeah, he was seventh for me, and he's the only other person from New Zealand that I end up having. He dominated New Zealand until the final six, which is a very long time. And I think that he was the most forgivable of everyone this year who was voted out with an idol in their pocket, which was a lot of people. So I had him, and the other person whose name I just had floating around who didn't make my top 10 would have been JT. I think in terms of like best players of the year, he could be in that conversation, but I don't think we saw enough from his game in that he obviously left before the merge.
Yeah, I put Matt on my honorable mentions as well. I just think the big sticking point for me, like you said, Shannon, was him getting voted out with an idol. That always dropped a player a bunch of places in my book, where yes, you might be able to give reasoning behind it, especially someone
the
like
the reasoning
Matt.
That he was playing with his close friend, like that's a difficult blindside. Like,
yeah, it's true,
it's fairly forgivable, surely.
But I put him as an honorable mention. I actually did not include anyone else, just because I feel like with this and Australia, actually, there were a lot of solid players, but a lot of flawed players, which is really exciting and a lot of fun, and makes for a very volatile game. When you're looking objectively at, like, was this person a top 10 player of the year, even though they make these huge mistakes, it's a little tough to sort of compare it.
Okay, do you guys think that the fact that Lisa had to orchestrate a 3-2-1 vote to get Matt out, does that speak to the strength of Matt's game as well? I mean, essentially saying that this is the strategy that would have to be employed to get him out? Hmm. Or,
yeah,
I don't know, is it just the strength of Lisa's game? Like, I'm sort of trying to think, like, how do those two different things factor into the fact that it had to be a 3-2-1?
No, I think I agree, because if you look at the vote before the final six, which was the final seven, Matt had ultimate control, like 100% control. And even there, you know, he did have Adam and stuff and alliances there at the final six, where you did have to pull off one of the absolute best moves of the year. And I think, you know, obviously we have Lisa on Mount Rushmore because she can pull it off, but I don't feel like that was so good that he was like beaten by the best, but I don't feel like it detracts that much from him because he was still good. But what a move from Lisa, like that's hard to combat.
Yeah, that's a good point, that it was sort of like a 1-in-a-million move that ended up actually paying off that got him out. Because he did have the idol, and he was pretty much insulated on all sides to the point where Lisa had to basically, you know, pull the wool over his eyes, but over Tess and Adam's eyes as well. Because if they got wind of what was going on, the plan wouldn't have necessarily happened, which I think is interesting. So, yeah, I think that, you know, he was, by far, in my opinion, the second best player in Survivor New Zealand, to the point where when I went on this podcast with you, Shannon, I was like, oh yeah, I mean, Matt's going to be in the final tribal council. It's just a matter of whether or not he gets lambasted over his relationship with Dave. Little did we know the situation would be reversed, actually.
Oh, poor Dave. But yeah, and then the survey only put Lisa, as we said, that US bias. But I mean, that can be fairly fair. I think, Mike, you only have Lisa in there as well in the top 10. She was sixth, even with that lower viewership for New Zealand. And then when you put it with average placement, as I said, she goes up to fourth. So I feel good that out of all this data that we got and all our different opinions, we feel very, very good about this Mount Rushmore that we came up with. Like, I feel very great about that.
Yeah, let the Photoshops come, people. All right, so moving on to South Africa, I had Werner up here. I agree with Liana. I put Annalise in here as well, and it might be surprising. When you look back and you look at all the circumstances that Annalise mm-hmm. went through, even though she almost went out at that rock draw, by the gloriousness of Ace, she was able to stay in. I just look at that post-swap when she's on New Luzon and basically is out by herself. The fact that she was able to essentially worm her way in with Katinka and basically form bonds with everyone. And then once they got to the merge, she was in that alliance, which is crazy because she turned against her former Luzon members. They still seem to have okay feelings for her, but she was totally a member of the Dawn's Mafia, as it were, which is just crazy considering how much of an outsider she was at first. I think she is such an amiable person and is such a great social player. And the fact that she had to get taken out because she would have just crushed in the end game, I think, is very indicative. So I put her in there. And that's also because I might have put Palesa in there as well, but again, when you're voted out with an idol in your pocket, especially when there's a good chance you're the next to go, that's going to dock you some points in my book.
What ranking did you give Annalise?
I put her around like the 6-7 range, just because, again, it's a lot of what ifs in terms of, you know, what would have happened had she made it to the end. But I feel like she was playing a winning game up to the point where she happened to get voted out because, you know, she wasn't able to keep the ball rolling. Jean was.
Well, I put Annalise 8th. And I said in highlighted right here that she doesn't get enough credit. So I'm really glad that we all are giving her credit now, because as I said, like she's almost like forgotten to Werner's awesome game when like she was right there alongside with him. Depending on who you ask, she was like pulling some of the strings as well. To me, she's the only one in this cast who can be compared to him strategically. And she definitely makes my top 10. In terms of Palessa, yes, she was voted out with an idol in a way that I think was less forgivable than Matt Hancock. And while The rock draw was very cool, the Mariska vote was incredible gameplay from Palessa. Just was like that one episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want a masterclass on how to just absolutely do some brilliant stuff, that's Palessa for you there. But then from there, I'm like, what was kind of happening? I think, Mike, you and I kind of realized after our deep dives that Matthias could have really had some power if they had thrown a challenge, if they'd kept Josie around, if they had taken Tom out before the merge. And to me, after the Mariska vote, it was just a little bit passive, you know, like, what was her plan going into the merge? There was no majority there for her. She needed Tom to be one of her numbers. That's insane. Obviously, they didn't treat Tom very well. Can't really blame them, depending on what was really happening. But it does come back and hurt your game. And then she was just basically part of this begonia that she couldn't stop. And the minority were just doing some really crazy things there that allowed them to be begonged, even with like a lot of advantages. Two idols played incorrectly. She's in the conversation for me, but I wouldn't put her in my top 10.
Yeah, I think Palessa, for me, she stood out to me because I think she just had a really calm, cool social game. Maybe not to the level of Annalise, who I actually had as 7 in my rankings as well, because I think, agreed, doesn't get enough credit. But, you know, now I don't know. Now she's got too much credit. Take it back.
Yeah, I'm like so surprised that we all put her in our top 10. I'm so happy about that.
Well, because I think it was what I really commend her for was that in the topsy-turvy game that was Survivor South Africa, she was probably the most consistent. And she was the most consistent without having her head stuck out too far, like someone like Werner. And so I give her a lot of kudos there that she was the ship that was basically riding all these tumultuous waves that hit that ocean.
Yeah. And just like to think about all the stuff that she survived, just like, oh my God, like how did you manage to do that? That's absolutely amazing. As somebody who's just so amiable and everybody wants to be their friend. I mean, this really is such a great social game. And yeah, just South Africa was just, you're playing with crazy people. So the fact that you're able to, you know, do what you can with these crazy people, like that's impressive.
So Leon,
and she came so close to winning as well. Like that gets forgotten. And I think I'm going to talk about it a bit more on the superlatives, but she was so close. Like it could have been a final three. If Martinez didn't quit this talk, said it would have been a final three. And like possibly she got Sarid because she's one change in the rules there from sitting next to Jean and Tom at a final three and walking home with R$1 million.
Damn you, Matthew Anus. all right, let's move on. Australian Survivor, Liana, remind me, who did you put in your top 10 from Champions versus Contenders?
I had Sharn.
Same.
Yeah, and so did the survey have her at number 9. I did not have Sharn, but I did have one person from Australia.
Was it Benji?
It was Russell. No. it was Monica. That's who I am. Oh.
Oh,
come on. Okay.
On brand.
No, I'm not. It's not even a joke. I know that this will get laughs, but I had her in at number 9. And you know what? In the finale podcast, I said Matt was the best player of the season because he won the Danzy. I actually take that back. I now feel like while he's in
revoking the Danzy.
Well, no, he still won the Danzy, but just like I said, I thought he was the best player. And like now I look back and like he was so dominant. But I mean, if anyone who was voted out with an idol in their pocket is going to be like disqualified for how bad that particular thing was, like it's definitely Matt Rogers. Monica, you know, we talked a lot about it with Angelina in terms of when women have a different perception just because they're women. And I don't know if Angelina's the best example of that, but for me, Monica definitely is. Like she was completely in the know. I'm not going to talk about it too much, but in the know for every vote, got voted out because of Brian Lake, didn't do anything wrong, most consistent game. And she's the only person that I have in my top 10.
I think the only question is, which I think is still a lingering question, you know, if she goes to the finals, how well
with
does
Brian
she
Lake.
Do? If she goes with
brilliant
Brian,
strategy.
If she goes with Brian, yeah, that's definitely going to help her. But it did seem like the perception from them was that they felt like Monica wasn't really doing anything, which I think to your point wasn't necessarily the case. But when perception is reality out on Survivor, it's tough to determine exactly if she ends up, you know, if it's her, Sharn and Brian, and Sharn wins that final immunity again and takes Monica, assuming that Sharn doesn't tank her game like she did in the final Tribal Council, it's a bit of a tougher uphill climb.
Well, we can't assume that Sean wouldn't tank her game because that's what happened. And I think I wanted Australia to be represented. And I was like, well, as I said, I like then took out Matt Rogers because I thought it was just disqualifying. And then Sean as well, anyone who listened to the Australian finale podcast, like I just couldn't put her in my top 10. You know, if she does take Brian Lake and she wins, which I think she would have done, then she probably does round out somewhere like in the 8 to 10s of my top 10. But the fact that she pulled a more Wu-like move and took Shane Gould based on, I think, a more like, you know, a pretty bad misunderstanding of the game, there's a big disparity between taking the obviously wrong person and losing than taking the right person and winning. So that bumps her then out of my top 10 because that's a really big mistake. I couldn't reward it with a top 10 placement.
Australia had my most number of honorable mentions. I put Brian in there.
I love Brian Lake, but he played terribly.
Well, no, there were a couple things that he did, but yeah,
he did all the same things without the terribleness, Mike.
Well, that's the thing though, is that with these honorable mentions, there are people who made moves, but at the same time, like did things that were very much against their game. I still don't know whether or not it was purposeful when he didn't make the 2-2-2 vote and ended up sending Fenella out. Speaking of which, I put both of Shanella in there, just because I thought they did a good job of especially when it was champion strong. They did a pretty good job of navigating things, but things like Shawnee voting out Monica, I still don't think was necessarily a good move considering how much it screwed her over at Final Four. I put Shane in there because I still think there were a couple of things that she was able to do, and she did better than Sean in that final tribal council. I put Benji in there because I admire. I mean, if you're talking about moves of the year, you have to put him convincing Sharn to play the idol on herself up there. I know as much as we may all grouse about, oh, I'm the king, I'm going to dethrone the godfather, etc. That's a pretty ballsy and badass move, but I don't know if anything else he did was really that fantastic, to be quite honest. I think his handling of the Tegan stuff, especially when she came back, was not that great, but the fact that he was able to, I'm still stunned about the fact that he was able to arrange that overthrow of Matt Rogers. That's just insane to me. And actually, this is probably going to be the biggest surprise. I will mention, I put Moana Hope in there. I know that she ended up leaving, but the fact that she was able to help organize that blind side of Russell, which was so scattered. But I think, you know, had she not gotten sick and decided to leave, she had a tight alliance with Matt. She had an idol in her pocket. Like, I know there's a lot of what ifs there, but I thought that she could actually do a pretty good job of who knows what's to come in the game, but it seemed like she was in at least a good place by the time that she left.
Yeah, well, Benji, like, talk about an even game with Nick. He's, like, that times a million. Like, he definitely did some excellent things with the Matt Rogers stuff, for example, and even in the pre-merge, he was kind of ruling it there. And then, like, how many flaws there were in his game kind of drags him out of my top 10, maybe drags him below my honorable mentions as well. There was a lot of flaws there.
He's scraping the bottom of my honorable mentions because, again, he also got blindsided.
He was also my last honorable mention.
Just because he's such a either it's like amazing, super exciting, or you're just like, God damn it, Benji, like get it together. So I think
he was voted out with an idol, and that's only like one of several issues with his game.
one of several.
Yeah, but
fun TV.
Yeah, but the audience, I mean, if we did like the average placement, he came in at what, like number 15? He was the second highest ranked Australia player when it came to best player.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of things the audience got wrong, 40 people put Russell Hans in their top 10, which, as I said, I love this ranking of Russell Hans. Is it on his body of work this year? Because that's insane. Or is it on like who he is as a player? In which case, I think it's also a little insane.
just a wee bit. But maybe, again, it speaks to just how insanely flawed all the Australian Survivor players were in there. And I totally see your point.
Well, this was ranked against the entire year.
Maybe I got something in my throat. I'm not entirely sure.
If you put Russell Hans in your top 10, come forward. I want to have a word with you.
Out yourself, please. But I do see your point, Shannon, in terms of, I think Sharn, much like these other Australian Survivor players, had a bunch, like, flaws were very prominent, especially the poop idol mismanaging, where she, like, basically embarrassed herself in front of the jury by misplaying the idol right there and getting mind effed by Benji. Coupled with, I wouldn't even say not taking Shane was the problem. I think it was just her final tribal council. I still hold the philosophy that she went in there winning maybe 6-3, and just through the way she performed, coupled with the way that Shane was actually able to talk up her own game, flipped it 5-4 in Shane's direction. It was an interesting season of people sort of, between her and John, essentially, like, people tanking their game at final tribal council when they were walking in as the favorite. But the fact of the matter is, I do feel like Sharn did a good job of playing her way out of sticky situations. You know, the fact that she was able to get the vote turned back onto Benji, the fact that she was able to, from what we were seeing, sort of convince Brian to, you know, to basically vote for Sharn. So she played the idol to get rid of Fenella, the fact that she was able to bring Shawnee over to get rid of Monica. Like, there's some good stuff there. There just was a good amount of bad stuff as well. But I try to think that I personally think that the good overplays the bad, even though it ended up with a losing result.
See, I disagree because I think it was an uneven game, but that would have been overcome if she had done, you know, you say that it's not about who she chose and it's about her final tribal performance. Like, it's kind of both. She needed to do at least one of choosing the right person and then following up with the good tribal council performance. She did neither of those things, so she lost. If it had been a different result and she had won, I think it would have been enough to overcome the flaws. But the fact that, like, her almost her biggest flaws came at the end to kind of, like, compound those flaws drops her out of the top 10 for me. But I will say the 12 people did put Monica in that top 10, and that's a victory for me. And
so out yourselves as well, in addition to the rest of people.
Yes, you people are my new best friend. I will give you some sort of prize. But I can't believe I'm yelling about Monica on another podcast. Like, this is my legacy now.
This is
okay, Sharn beat Lydia in an endurance competition. Like, yeah. Can I just throw that out there? Like, I know that, you know, in our
world. And she pooped out an idol. Like, it was an uneven
pooped
day.
An idol. She laid an idol egg. That is incredibly impressive.
Yeah, not even Russell can do that. Not even Russell can procreate idols.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, no Sharn.
Let's finish off our top 10 players with David versus Goliath, which I feel like is going to probably have a good amount of entrance from both us and the listeners. Liana, who did you put in your list from DVG?
Davey.
That was it? All right. All right. I remember you saying that. Yeah.
Well, the survey responders, they had a lot. And I said, you know, there's US bias and there's recency bias. So we're going to have a lot. They had Nick at third, Davey fourth, Christian fifth, and then Mike White came in at eighth. So that's a lot. And we'll definitely talk through all those names. Personally, I really want to talk about this because I had Mike White in fifth and I had Nick at sixth. And I feel like their games, I want to compare there. And then I ended up having Davey in at 10. So those were the three that I have. Did you have Mike and Nick as well?
Yeah, I had the same three as you, Shannon. I had Mike, Nick, and Davey. I put as an honorable mention, I put Christian in there. And I don't know. I personally feel like there is some stuff there. The fact that he was able to utilize his social connections to the point where he was a threat says something. But I talked about this when I was on the voicemails with Rob, that I feel like there's an interesting difference in the social game between getting along with everybody and weaponizing that element in order to benefit your game. And I feel like what Christian was able to do was the former, and I feel like what Mike White was able to do was the latter, where he was able to say, hey, we get along, right? Great, here's what the plan is. As opposed to Christian just got along well with everybody. But I can't really think of, besides the Jessica vote, if there really was any, like, actionable items that he really was the spearhead of. So I do feel like it might come from a bit of character love and fan favorite aspect of Christian as well, but that's why he led to my honorable mentions. I put Gabby in there as well. I know that there were, you know, the Christian targeting, had it gone in a different direction, could have worked out for her. I don't know exactly what the path to the end for her is at that point, nor if she's going to play a winning game. But after listening to her deep dive with Rob, I think she has a good head of things. And I think the Carl vote was super intriguing, and the way that she was able to help organize that, I feel like is something to talk about. So I put those two in my honorable mentions as well.
So I wouldn't have had, I didn't make honorable mentions, but I think I would have had Mike White in my honorable mentions now that I'm thinking about it, because I think to your point, Mike, about the fact that he was able to take advantage of the relationships that he had with people and then turn that into moves within the game. And I think that there was a stretch of moves that were really impressive from his gameplay that I think really push him into sort of being in this top realm of contenders.
Yeah, well, I was happy to see that Mike White made the top 10, even though, as I said, like, pretty a lot of people from David versus Goliath made the survey's top 10. I do think that he was the best player from the season. It kind of, like, dawned on me as I was watching the finale, watching this, like, final three, I'm like, Mike White is the best player of the season. Like, I would definitely vote for him. We've definitely spoken about Nick's very uneven game, you know, super flashy, innovative, some brilliant stuff there, and then all the flaws. And Mike's game was, like, kind of the opposite of that, in that there wasn't any of the flashiness, but it was just really consistent. You know, he wasn't left out of any votes besides, you know, when he and the Goliaths were very much outplayed by the Davids in terms of, like, the mechanisms and the advantages that they brought to the table, and all of the Goliaths have that cross to bear. But besides that, Mike really knew what was going on. He had a good post-swap as well, and then he finished so, so strong. And he just, for me, he beats out Nick, even though it's close. You know, I put Mike in at fifth, I put Nick in at sixth, but he to me, had the knowledge that Nick didn't have. And he was out playing at that point where Nick's getting blindsided at things like the final six. And Mike White has so much agency at so many pivotal votes that it just really impressed me. And I still think like a famous person getting three votes, yes, being famous might have helped him get there, but that's impressive. And the fact that Nick in his deep dive was talking about how like Mike was the other biggest jury threat, where you would never think that was possible considering he's famous. Like his game just grew. I think that it snuck up on all of us. I think it's so much better in retrospect. And that's maybe why Mike White was so mad at Rob. But like he was putting in the work the entire game with the social relationships that he had, and it paid dividends towards the end. But it was just really, really hard to see that before until it came to fruition. And now that I've seen it, I'm very impressed.
Right. And I think that what I liked about Mike, and that sort of snuck up on me as well, as I look at qualities that I admire in other winners. You know, Lisa doesn't get targeted until Final Five. Mike White doesn't get targeted until Final Five. Tom has agency and control over the last pivotal moment in the game. Mike has agency and pivotal control over the last moment.
You're comparing Mike to Tom?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's not that far from Nick and Shane. But I feel like there are some things that Mike was able to do that, again, might not necessarily come across in an edit of a typical Survivor season where there's a lot going on. But there, he was in a constant save position, but also in a position of power. There were a couple of Goliath votes that he was left on the outside of, but he was never in immediate danger to the point where he was the swing vote in the Carl vote. And I think that just speaks to how powerful of a position he was in. I talked about this, I think, in our B&B podcast, but I think the fact that he even got three jury votes in the end is extremely admirable, to your point, Shannon, given the fact that we all went in saying, oh, this guy is dead in the water, whether he makes it to the final tribal or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the responses from the listeners, and, you know, nobody really had Mike White in their top like 1, 2, 3. But there are about, you know, half of the people or even 2/3 of the people that ranked him put him somewhere in the like 4, 5, 6, 7 range. So I think that that's a good spot for Mike, that he sort of falls in. Well, he's not, you know, one of the best players of this year in 2018, but he definitely slides into maybe that middle lower range of good players.
Yeah.
I think Mike White's game is like a fine wine. Like it's only going to get better with age. If you go back and you rewatch David versus Goliath, I think we're going to see the aspects of his game that just ended up just completely paying off. And like he was putting all that work in, and you know, he doesn't do a minority votes, but there's none of that flashiness there that obviously Nick does have, but I also just don't see the flaws. And I think that his fingerprints are kind of all over the season. Now that I look back at it, like his strategy is there the whole time. He was a swing vote at the Carl vote. He ended up taking out Christian, who was the biggest threat. He was doing a lot. And yeah, three votes for a famous person is basically a win in my book.
Yeah. And he loves fine wine as well. So I guess you are what you drink.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's interesting because I also kind of feel like Davey is somebody who also has a game that I think will get better when you rewatch and you start to notice more of the things that Davey seems to be doing. Because I think, you know, you kind of lump Davey in with like Davey, Nick, Carl, you know, they all sort of fall into the same boat. And yes, Davey was blindsided with Nick in some of those votes. But I think that Davey had a little bit more agency and made some moves behind the radar that we didn't really get to either see, or we only saw parts of, and we didn't necessarily get to see the full implications, or it was attributed to a different person. So I think that Davey, similar to Mike White, well, I don't think, you know, maybe he didn't play as strong a game as Mike White. Davey just really stands out to me because I think that there was a lot behind the scenes that he was doing that he doesn't necessarily get credit for.
I think there
I put him in my top 10.
I put him in my top 10 because I look back at his game and I'm looking at like him playing the idol for Christian, which was a game changer. I look at him telling Christian to play the idol for himself, which while Christian got voted out the next time, I think was a great sort of bridge. And I think Christian talked about how close his relationship was with Davey was. But the thing that I forgot about was him helping convince Alec to flip on Natalia on Vuku and essentially, you know, saving him and Elizabeth there. Or should they go again? I think Kara was basically on the bottom there. He was able to say, okay, we know that Carl's coming in. We just have to get past this one vote. And he saw that Alec was being a bit squirrely. And it seemed like from what we were seeing, I get your point, Leon, about the fact that there's a lot of conflation between Davey, Nick, and Carl, but I think that was a move that Davey was able to make there where, you know, Davey's like, all right, I'll make this bond with, we'll make this bro bond with Alec, we'll whisper to each other at tribal council, and he was able to sort of help Alec swing over to the other side and secure that vote that really, you know, helps signal to the other Goliaths as well that maybe things are not necessarily, you know, great in paradise after the swap.
I really don't feel like anyone's conflating Carl. It's just Davey and Nick. Like, did Carl get any votes in this survey?
Bing!
Yeah.
Well, let's... go ahead.
But just in terms of Davey versus Goliath, I need to see more from Gabby personally. Like, I like some of the stuff she was doing. Wasn't enough to put in the top 10 for me. But Christian, I feel, He got a lot of love in the survey. I do feel like the conversation around Christian is really extreme in either direction. Like, I think he's a really good player. I think his social game is incredible. I think, well, I mean, in terms of, you know, at least people liking him, as you said, Mike, and he sees the game, I think, in such a brilliant way. Like, if we were ranking best future RHAP guests, like, he's top of my list. Mm-hmm. And I do think that sometimes it gets overstated a little bit because of his popularity, because of the archetype he presents. And then I feel like there's like a vocal minority who rally against that by being like, no, it's overstated. He's an outwardly bad player. And it's like, well, it's probably like he's a very good player who's also overrated. Like, it can be both things to me. I do think the fact that he got 18 votes was getting, you know, like the same way that I feel like, well, I don't like that Ben needed so many idols to save himself. You know, Christian was getting votes from the final 12. Like, he couldn't conceal his threat level. I don't think feel like he managed it that well, and that he was getting voted out a lot, basically, and needed other mechanisms to save him. Like, I like it when people have the advantages or have the relationships where people want to use the advantages on you, but you also don't necessarily need them. Like, that's why I love Tony Vlachos. He had all the idols. He never actually got voted out to the point where he needed to use the idols. So the fact that he was getting so many votes against him, I don't feel like he's a top 10 player, but I still like feel like he's a very good player. And mm-hmm. I feel like the conversations around him don't need to be so dramatic.
So just reading over some brief audience data before we move on here, just to sort of sum up, because I know we sort of darted around as to who plays where. So in terms of the weighted score from this best player rankings, Wendell came in at number one, followed by Dominic, Nick, Davey, Christian, Lisa, Werner, Mike, Sharn, and then Michael Yerger to round out the top 10. But if we then finagle the numbers a bit and go by instead their average placement from 1 to 10 in terms of the way that players rank them, we have a bit of a different order that might be a bit more sound. We have Wendell 1, Dom 2, Werner 3, Lisa 4, Nick 5, Christian 6, Davey 7, Sharn 8, Shane 9, and Mike what? White 10th.
Shane!
Shane coming once like her, much like her win, coming out of nowhere to sneak her way into the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is with Shane. Shane, when you look at sort of where people rank her in terms of, you know, on a scale of you know, the best players of what from 1 to 10, she solidly falls in like the 5, 6, 7 range. And so I think that that sort of pulls her up in terms of the rankings. Whereas, you know, somebody could be more polarizing and get like a lot of really high votes, but very few votes. Whereas most of the people that voted, if they voted for Shane, they put her like solidly in the middle, which I think brings her up to the top 10.
All right. Now, this was a lot, but we have our Mount Rushmore. So I feel like we accomplished something.
Yeah, we got something that we can sort of keep in our pockets and hopefully not poop out. Let's move
wait,
on.
Wait, sorry. I know this is going to go real long, but can we talk about the people that no one voted for at all? We don't have to talk about them a lot, but I just want to mention the people that weren't voted for at all. And so can you guys maybe tell me like one thing about these people? Okay. Brad Norris.
Oh, a gym teacher who got
also got voted out.
He also got voted out with an idol, I believe. Yeah.
With none of the positive stuff to bring it up.
Okay, Vusi. I'm Vusi, bitch.
Mike
thinks that Vusi would have won in a different timeline.
I do, because he was likable and also a challenge threat. So had Visayas, you know, maybe gained control at the merge, it would have happened. But he really had probably the most unremarkable edit, maybe not including Stacey Lee of Survivor South Africa. So it makes sense that he was unmemorable enough to even get a vote.
Yeah, right. But that's so weird because I felt like Vusi was really, I don't know. I liked Vusi. And so, but yeah, I was also not surprised. Okay.
Also, fewer responders are putting South Africa in, though. So, like, that's maybe true. Some random from the American ones are being, you know, put in the survey. But who is voting for Vusi? Like,
that's true.
If you're representing South Africa, you got to be putting in some better players than that.
Okay. Damian Tomlinson.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't he on the outs of the Russell vote as well, even though I think Russell voted for him. So I think it was clear that just like this game was not for him, and he ended up sort of getting voted out because unfortunately the players thought he was a bit of a physical liability.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. For a hot second, I was like, who? So, yeah, that was that. Jenna Austin.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think that one kind of makes sense, right? I mean, doesn't she was the one who got injured, right? She injured mm-hmm. her foot.
Oh my God, I also was like, who are you talking about?
I mean, you could say that, like, had she stayed, remember, she sort of had, like, the interesting parent squad with her, Tegan, and Heath, where, like, they were the ones that swung over to get rid of Crazy Steve on the Contenders tribe. Maybe something mm-hmm. would have happened, but that's, again, a lot of what-ifs. I have too many alternate universes with Vusi, anyway. Too many alternate Vuniverses.
Yeah, welcome to our new game where Mike gets all of the people who got zero votes and gives us the way in which they would have won the game.
Yeah, this is fun.
Okay, All right. This one was actually a little bit of a surprise to me, but Anita.
Yeah, that's
I bet that she would have stood. Well, I guess this is best player, not like most interesting.
There were a lot of people players. In Australian Survivor. You know, that's it's a lot. Not okay. a lot of game birds.
We'll go quickly through the next ones. So speaking of Australian Survivor, Paige didn't get any votes. Heath didn't get any votes. Crazy Murder Man Steve didn't get any votes. And the very last person on the list, Jessica Pete.
Whoa!
Where is Stacey Lee? And no. B.
Okay, let's see. So
people are trolling.
Stacey Lee got one rank as second.
Come forward, whoever you are. Publicly shame you.
B got one in seventh.
And that's not even like trolling. It's not like haha, put B first. It's like I feel like she was the seventh best player of the year. That's the kind of person who like doesn't really remember a lot except for David versus Goliath and is just clicking names.
Yeah, or like, okay, I filled out the top five. I just random the rest of these people.
And like, they're not even like names you could confuse with other people. So like I'm very confused.
Oh my god.
And I also will say
how many people put Monica? Well, I said 12.
Mm-hmm. And some other names that I'll throw out there because we're love throwing out Survivor player names. Just with that average placement one, I know that we sort of built out to the top like 20 or so. Some other interesting names that were thrown out that we didn't really talk about. Kara was number 17. Kellen came in at number 19. Allison came in at number 21. And Alec came in at number 22, which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of recency bias, but I do love it as a player.
All right, well, let's move on here. Let's move away from the strategy and move into the shenanigans. We asked you guys to also choose up to 10 of your favorite players. The way at least I took this was it's less about strategy. It's all about entertainment, baby. Who were you most entertained by this entire year of 2018? So I like this idea of going around the horn again. Let's start with Survivor David versus Goliath. Shannon, did you put any... No, keep saying that. Ghost Island. Shannon, did you have any Ghost Island players that you put in your top 10 favorite players?
I did, and I also want to say with this question that it was too hard, so I cheated. I only did post-merges, so I will be giving you my top 10 and also the pre-merges who I would have put but who missed out, and that gives me a list of roughly 18 once you put in my honorable mentions as well. I feel like this is fair, right?
It's fine. I ended up going with 12 just because there are so many great contestants.
So you cheated too?
Yeah, I cheated as well.
I think I might have, well, I don't know if I cheated the most, but I didn't even try. I just like listed players from each season that I was like, I love them.
So we all just completely disregarded the rules for this category. We all admit that, right?
It's our survey and like we made people and like we get to talk about it on podcasts. So we can say as many as we want, but these people can only click 10. Like I feel incredibly bad that we asked them to do this like impossible thing.
All right. Well, Shannon, talk to me about some of the post-merge Ghost Islanders that you put in your list.
Well, of my list of 10, I actually only put Dom. Like, people had to be cut. What? And Ghost Island was a really long time ago. But I did put Wendell in my honorable mentions as well.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Liana?
Yeah, I forgot you actually stuck to, like, the numbers, sort of.
I have a top 10.
I put Chris Noble, Seabass / Jenna. They went together in my brain. Michael Yerger and Kellen are my favorite players of Ghost Island.
You cheated properly if you had enough space to put Seabass and Jenna. Like, you're not even trying at this point.
I'll admit, Seabass was an honorable mention for me, I'll admit, just because, I mean, my love for Seabass was tracked throughout our coverage of Ghost Island. I loved how UTR rando he was and just how much of a doofus he was, in a good way.
We ought to put them both in. Like,
Jenna had much less to do in this season. Jenna had some fun moments and she had a great Ponderosa, but I feel they showed much less of her character-wise than Seabass, personally. Jeff Probst did not make any weed jokes about Jenna during a challenge, okay?
God, your hair smells like a dead weasel. That's so iconic.
You know, now that we've gone through the people who didn't get any votes, I'm like kind of thinking about the people who must have got some votes. And like, so Seabass was getting some top 10 votes. Like, who is voting for Seabass? There's a lot of people who have to own up to some very, very bad survey responses.
You know what? If Dom and Wendell happened to get voted out at 6 and 5, Seabass could have won the game. Just saying.
Oh my god.
Okay, so
such bad theory.
So here's what I will say, what sort of informs my like favorite players was I just started, you know, we kind of talked about this idea of, you know, these Survivor seasons sometimes feel like a fever dream because just like these random thoughts would like pop into my head of stuff that happened. So like, for example, Chris Noble walking at the merge, all of everybody like down to the water thing. And, you know, Dom and Wendell are sitting back up there and it's like a teacher taking his kids to kindergarten. And like that stood out to me. I was like, oh my God, that's such a good moment. And then like the fact that we were talking about Seabass being the Willy Wonka of this season because he was so into candy and he was just stoned all the time. And there were so many stony baloney jokes. Like that just stood out to me as just being incredibly iconic. And I know that it's just one single moment from a whole season. And you could talk about somebody like Dominic or Wendell who probably had a bigger impact on the season as a whole. But that's how I picked my people based on really random tidbits that I remembered. So if you have problems with my people that I pick, I do too, because I just chose them based on like the insanity that popped into my head.
If you can't hate yourself, how could you hate anybody else?
Exactly. Can I get an amen?
Like, so, Liana, you cheated so much. Like, I had to kick Chris Noble out of my top 10.
Yeah.
Because I made a top 10. But Chris Noble is, I mean, like, I haven't done the math on like best characters of the year, like objectively so, but like surely Chris Noble's gonna make that list. But just in terms of like personal favorite, he didn't make my list, but like what a gem. The Ponderosa video is still on repeat. Like honestly, the Ponderosa video is the best moment of Ghost Island.
Yeah,
I pulled that audio and I have it on my phone and I listened
to it. Good, because it got taken down. So you sort of have like the golden copy. Yeah, I mean that's how I sort of looked at these. I just looked at like my favorite character. So that's why I put Chris in there, is just because he was the gift that kept on giving. And he was my only representative who made my final list just because he really just stood out from the way he was edited was so grandiose and hysterical between the rapping, between tossing the rock, you know, just between the way he sort of behaved, how he talked about modeling, and specifically the way that everyone reacted to Chris Noble was just one of the great light spots of comedy that existed in Ghost Island. And I feel like it was great that he went out the way he did. There was some potential there, possibly considering he went out at his first tribal council. But I feel like in terms of the Chris story, it was amazing to have him confidently stride in there with an idol in his pocket into his very first tribal council and then get completely blindsided. As honorable mentions, I did put Seabass in there. I put Kellen in there as well. I talked about this, I think, when I was on with Rob during Ghost Island. I just really love someone who comes in there and just wears their emotions on their sleeves, because that's honestly how I would probably play. So I appreciated the fact that, especially in this swath of people who we didn't really get to know, that we saw so much of Kellen really says something. I put Bradley in there just because I think we relished this idea of a survivor villain, and the fact that Bradley admitted, like, I was a bit of a dick out there was fun. And I put Jacob Derwin there, too, because, I mean, when you think about...
Oh, my God, you guys really cheated so much. Like,
it was an honorable mention. Honorable mention, did not make the final list, but I feel like if you're talking about pre-merge flameouts, like, he's going to make history. I feel like if you talk about the cast of Ghost Island, he actually stands out just because his two-episode arc was amazing.
He put rice in a sock. Oh, my God, that's so cool.
You were meant to make a top 10.
I did. They're honorable mentions. They did not make my overall list. I was talking about honorable mentions. Chris was the only one that made the list proper.
Mike is too suave to make a top 10 list. So,
Liana, like, you honestly didn't even try.
I didn't try. Okay. Well, first of all, I like that Mike is trying to walk this fine line of like, okay, but they're like honorable mentions, though. So that makes it different.
That they are, though. Shannon has honorable mentions. I went with mine down to 12.
Okay, well, fine. Then
I'm taking 10 away, of mine. Away the line now. Like, now I'm just going to throw out names now that I know that this wasn't important and everything we're doing is for nothing.
Okay. All right, Shannon, now that you have gone through your existential crisis, talk to me about some of your favorite players from Survivor New Zealand.
Well, let's go through the entire cast. From my actual top 10, I had to cut a lot of people and it was incredibly difficult. I ended up having Dave and Aaron in my top 10. Again, I cut the pre-mergers of Dylan and JT, who would have made it, but they didn't make the merge. And those were the rules that I was going by. It makes a lot of sense. I love Aaron. That was kind of my thing. I felt like I had to put him in. And Dave, that's just a special place in my heart for Dave. I love the game he played. I actually think that he's slightly underrated. Probably could have talked about him in best players. Like, you know, some things could have gone another way and he could have won. It's a very hard game to judge based on all the weird stuff that was happening with his friendship with Matt. But yeah, I'm a Chani person. I just love Dave and Aaron. Put them in my top 10.
So I had Adam in my top 10 that I'm creating now. And then my honorable mentions were Renee, Liam, and Lisa. And I picked Liam because He
had all the room in the world to do it.
Because I could, in my honorable mention, so it's allowed. Because I just remember him being a complete idiot, and then him at Tribal Council with the way that they were in that cave and the fire, and he just looked like this New Zealand version of Logan Paul, and oh, that no. was when Logan Paul thing was like going on, and he had that hair, and I just really enjoyed seeing him on my television screen.
I picked him because he was like, Logan Paul is like the worst yes. logic.
Okay, and he was an idiot, and so it was kind of fun to like watch him just sort of flounder around like an idiot.
I did love that first episode montage where he's like, yeah, I don't think there's really any strategizing yeah. going on, and it literally cuts to like everyone else making deals around Liam.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
What did you like about Renee? I'm super curious, because I feel like Renee was one person who I think started off on a good point, but I think really wore thin on the viewers by the end of it.
Yeah, and I totally understand that, that she was somebody who, like, really started rubbing people the wrong way, especially with the past sort of, the last, like, three episodes that she was in. But she was somebody who I think I just naturally empathized with, and I think that I just had a personal connection to her and her personality, and I really liked her. And so that was why I had her on my honorable mention list of favorite players. And then Lisa was on there. She would have been in my top 10 list, but I included her in my top 10 best players. So yeah. She just made honorable mention.
Yeah, that's how I felt about Lisa. Like, I feel like I talked a lot about her in the best player, so I like bumped her down to my non-top 10, but now apparently we can say whoever I want, so I'm definitely putting her in my honorable mentions.
Yeah, I only had one here. It was Adam. And I know that Adam really grinded on some people's nerves, especially at the end, the way he was sort of like behaving about getting blindsided. But I don't know. I just loved how freaking saucy he was in those confessionals. And yes, they might have been a bit unwarranted, specifically his comments about Dave. But I don't know. In a season that had some interesting personalities, but not ones that necessarily popped, especially compared to the seasons around it, Adam was sort of the rare exception where, I don't know, he was comic gold to me. I understand he sort of got lambasted by the New Zealand community, especially. I was a little shocked that he was not the fan favorite, but considering some of the Mean Girls stuff that came out, I guess I do understand that.
Yeah, in terms of like best character, I think that he's first for that season and it's not close, but, and I still really enjoyed a lot of what he was doing, but in terms of favorite player, he didn't make the top 10 for me. But I mean, no one else was quite as extra as Adam.
Yeah, I think that's what I loved about Adam is like, I know he's being a super petty bitch, but I enjoyed watching it. So it's hurtful, but like, I'm not involved, so maybe I'm okay with it, which is, I shouldn't do that, but whatever. It was fun. And he had Botox and I liked that too. And he made jokes about it and I enjoyed that. And just the fact that Dave, when he would go eat, this is what I remember. Again, it's random fever dream things. So it's Dave being like, I'm dying because I ate too much food. And then Adam would do the like bad impersonations of Dave eating too much food. That was really entertaining.
The season would be a lot less if it didn't have Adam. And like, no matter what you think of him, like, that's just objectively true.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to Survivor South Africa. So this is the reason why I had to expand my top 10 list into a top 12 is because I picked five people from Survivor South Africa. I had Palesa, PK, Werner, Jean, and Tom. And I thought at first glance, like, I could get rid of one of these. And no, I can't. They all made crazy moves and they all were just such fantastic TV in such different ways that just, I mean, I guess if I had made a ranking, I'll be honest, Tom might be my favorite just because we're never going to see Homer Simpson play Survivor again, guys. This is the closest we're ever going to get. And so I have to put my mouth around that because it's gold in the fact that he won as well, that he was able to sort of fail upward and ends up winning as a result. But I mean, Jean, I thought was a hysterical confessional giver. Just so, like, sassy, and she was able to really come into her own. Werner, I think he was entertaining on top of being a great game player, eating the clue. Who does that? PK, I mean, you just need to talk about the episode where Shanae went home, where he's sneaking away while everyone's leaving their letters to grab an idol, gets into so many arguments with Tom. And Palesa, I just loved her rivalry with Tom. I love the moves that she was able to pull off in a very entertaining manner. So I had to be greedy and go with five there.
Oh, this was so good. This was so hard for me to pull from my top 10.
Just now.
Werner, I mean, the moment that stood out to me, if I had to answer the question of like, what is the one thing that stood out to me about 2018? It was I ate the clue because he ate a clue. And it was in the first episode. And I remember thinking, like, this person is crazy. What is even happening?
To the
and
point then where Shannon actually said, I'm not going to pick Werner as my winner because why would they show him eating a clue? That's too goofy. Little did she know the goofy editing that would be Survivor South Africa.
Oh, my God. Exactly.
I was correcting that. Like, he didn't win. But I remember the Tom one.
Oh, yeah, right. The logic was solid, I guess. And then also just the fact he's like, he's not driving the bus because he built the bus. And it's just so many good confessionals from him. He was so entertaining. And then for the PK stuff, just his fights with Tom. That's what stands out to me. He had this one quote that was like, I'll whoop your ass, old man.
Yeah, well, I think by far the best was, it's not a big deal. No, it's a small white deal.
Yeah.
PK and Tom are having an actual like boxing match coming up. If anyone wants to go to, it's somewhere in South Africa.
What?
I think in March. This is something that is happening.
Oh my God.
That's it's being
so
televised.
So PK can live up to his promise to beat his old ass.
I'll be watching.
There were just so many good people. And I mean, Tom obviously has to be there. I just remember thinking, I was like, okay, this guy will get voted out. This guy will get voted out. This guy's a goat. There's no way he's going to win. And then he wins. What? It was just a pure shock. I mean, watching that final tribal go down and watching the vote be 6-1 in favor of Tom. I mean, mind blown. The fact that this entertaining character can go on and have that type of run on the game. Good gameplay? No. But sure as heck, it was entertaining.
Okay, well, I was trying to stick to a top 10.
Oh my God.
And, you know, and that so that was two people per season. And South Africa really was difficult because what I put in my official top 10 was PK, Annalise, Jean, and Werner. And then I had to have Palesa and Thomas honorable mentions, which is crazy. And also, I didn't even include all my pre-merges because of my rules. And that's Tevin, Ace, and Martinez, who we haven't even spoken about. Mm. This cast is ridiculous. Like, I even love Sharnay. There are so many great people in this cast. It was just too difficult. Like, you could have a top 10 for just Survivor South Africa, and that would be a difficult question.
Oh, my God.
So, Ace! Ace! Yeah, Ace! Oh my God. So my favorite Ace moment is I think when he tries to dig the hole because he's trying to find the idol, and then he tries to play it off like it's some heating ducts to heat the shelter. It's like, dude, that's all that works.
And I love when I got to talk with both Jean and Tony, they're both like, yeah, we knew what he was doing. Like, no, he obviously was not digging a heating duct to vent air from it. Also, remember when Martinez, wrote his final three speech before and B, told Katinka if she died, no one would care. Yeah.
Remember when Martinez was Martinez? Like,
oh my God. Exactly. That image of him on the boat with his suit where he just looks so freaking pompous. And the fact that he wrote his own speech and then he's like wearing his suit as he gives all his confessionals, he's being a total asshole. Oh, he was such an interesting character.
I mean, we honestly could have done, like Shannon said, we could have just filled the top 10 with Survivor South Africa. Like, this cast is just pound for pound, like, an incredible, say what you want to about players, they're an incredible group of characters, and I really love them all. I hold them close to my chest.
Okay,
yeah, and in terms of best duo of the year, like, I think Dom and Wendell would be given a run for their money with Tom and Palesa. Like, the characters were amazing, but also the dynamics between a lot of these characters is just amazing as well.
And when they slept in that bed together.
When Palesa won the reward and Tom's like, oh, yeah, imagine if she picks me, and then she picks him. It's just such good storytelling.
Okay, I do.
And then she votes him to win.
I know, because he deserved it, obviously.
She was the biggest one to stump for him, like, from the beginning at Ponderosa.
Yeah. I think I've said this before, but I don't know in Survivor history, can someone go back and check? I guess I'll go back and check. But like, she votes for him to be first out in the first tribal council of the season and then votes him to win. Like, that feels like, when else could that possibly have happened?
No, that's pretty cool. I guess I was going to say maybe Nick. But I will say that this is now, I'm in my head, I'm just going to go ahead and apologize. This is sort of sounds like when my parents are together and they're like, hey, remember that time when that happened? And then they're like, yeah, ha ha ha. And I feel like that's what I'm doing right now. Remember that time when this happened? Ha ha ha.
Especially people didn't watch Survivor South Africa.
Yeah, we're basically doing like the Chris Farley show right now for Survivor South Africa. But I think that's okay because Survivor South Africa was an absolutely banana season. But let's move forward. Let's go to Australian Survivor. Shannon, who did you have in your bona fide, regimented top 10 from Australian Survivor?
Okay, well, you guys are about to find out why I'm so upset that I stuck to the rules, kind of. Because I had to cut out Monica. So I put her in my honorable mentions, and you guys were just randomly putting people in. So Monica was my first honorable mention. And Sam even didn't make my top 10. But again, honorable mentions, love them both. The only person that I put into my actual top 10 was Brian Lake.
Mm. And that's understandable, given you had a lot of love for him, both out of the game and in the game.
I mean, yeah, like the fact that he was a Hawks player, which is my AFL team. He came in and played Survivor. I was thinking that if he was going to win, I was going to have to create some sort of cult for him. For a while, he was doing kind of well, and I thought I might have to do that. And then he completely screwed up his game in increasingly entertaining ways. Like, I loved him as a character. I loved watching him screw up. I would have also been happy if he hadn't screwed up and had actually won the game. But yeah, for me, he was the only one who stood out as top 10. But he and Monica and Sam were definitely like a very clear three for me as my favorite from that season.
So mine, I only put Chinella in there. And it was a little tough because I think there were some entertaining characters, as Liana talked about. But for me, when I look at the Australian Survivor cast as a whole, there were a lot of people that were either villainized or maybe preached a bit too much about morals and morality when it came to the game. A bit too much mateship, as it were. And I feel like the two people that I always look to as sort of like that ray of sunshine and reality were Chinella. I love that this like graphic designer and HR assistant slash wife of a pro skateboarder who admits she's not really an outdoorsy person, to have them not only form this tight twosome, but also kind of dominate the game, I absolutely loved. And I just loved their laugh and the smiles and the fun they would poke at each other and at other players, maybe to their detriment sometimes because it made them stand out as a pair. But they were my two favorite characters of the season, bar none.
Yeah, I also had Chinella in my top 10. Obviously, it only counts as one because they're Chinella. I think because
stop
I had
saying top 10
in my top 10. I think I had such low expectations of the two of them as well that watching them throughout the majority of the season sort of get a grasp on the game and be able to, you know, play, but still be these really entertaining and fun characters. Because like you said, Mike, when it starts to get a little preachy and loyalty, blah, 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 it's a little annoying. And they were just really fun the whole way through. I actually did have Sam in my top 10 because, one, I just really liked Sam as a person. I also started listening to his podcast. It's about space. And he does this weird voice manipulator thing that makes him sound like he's in space. You know, like the really crappy ones that were used like, ah, Sam is in space. And it's really bad.
So he basically just adds reverb to his voice?
Yeah, pretty much. And it like lowers it a little bit and makes it seem like he's actually out there. So I had him, but really because of that. No. Sorry, this is I'm building to the moment. Okay. And it is when he's doing it's during that where they had to have their legs up and they were paired with another person. And he does that thing to Benji where he's like, I dreamt of you last night. You lost. I love that moment so much. That might be one of my favorite moments of 2018 because just, and he like the way he calls him over, just like Benji. So good. And then when Sharn is out there, or Shane is out there looking for her idol and she thinks that she's being sneaky, and then Sam just in the background gives this thumbs up because he's totally seeing her do it. He was just such a good character that was in the background. And I think this is what I'm sort of realizing is I like all of these little moments that stand out to me. And so, you know, he's somebody who wasn't a huge character in terms of the show, but was somebody who had a lot of these little moments that stood out to me personally.
Yeah. And that's the thing with the editing of Australian Survivor, where I feel like for Sam, what I saw of him on the show and in secret scenes and just outside of the show, it's 100% quality content. Like, he's a great character, but it just comes down to the fact that they didn't utilize him. And I do think with some of these superior seasons, you know, the South Africans and the David versus Goliath of it all, he would be utilized, even though he fell in kind of like the middle ground, like early merge. There was a lot of players that needed screen time. And obviously he wasn't one of them who got it, but I feel like better editing would have utilized him more because everything he put out there was just so great.
All right, let's move on to David versus Goliath. Lots of big characters here. I ended up picking three. I went with Natalie, Christian, and Angelina. I feel like those latter two speak for themselves. Christian was just a dynamic force of a character at every, say what you want to about him as a player, but as a character, he was just absolute gold, especially from an edit perspective. And Angelina, I just have not been so entertained by a player in quite some time. Christian, coupled with Christian as well, just between sort of the delusion, but the way that she was edited, coupled with the Rice stuff and the jacket stuff and the idol stuff and the finale, it was just, she's just a fantastic character overall. And she was so confident in herself that like, it just, it really made for a really fantastic painting of a narrative overall for this person. Shannon, who did you have from DVG in your top 10?
In terms of my favorite, I just had Christian and Davey. Obviously, Natalie was in the pre-merges I would have put in. Angelina is probably duking it out with Tom on live TV in terms of who's the best character of the year. Because this was favorite, she didn't make my top 10, just my honorable mentions. But just, yeah, as you said, in terms of character, like, I absolutely loved absolutely every single thing that she was doing. Just one of the Angelina moments would have been enough. But the fact that she had about 10 just speaks to the amazingness that was her character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, you know, I only had one in my top 10, and it was Angelina at the number 10 spot. I think because in terms of like favorite players, maybe it was just hard to rank from David versus Goliath because I felt like there were more people that were sort of on an even footing. So since there wasn't somebody that like really, really stood out apart from Angelina for me, I just didn't. You know, Natalie was a big character, but I think that there was a little bit of, oh, you know, she was only in during the pre-merge. So she sort of fell a little
bit by
the wayside.
That's why I made those rules.
Right. Then I also followed those rules, too. So that's why I had to drop Natalie out. Angelina was the only one that made the list. But there were a lot, you know, if I were to think honorable mentions, you know, Christian, Gabby, Davey, Mike, even, I think was a fun character. And so there were a lot of people that really were fun, but Angelina was the only one that cracked my top 10.
Yeah, I feel like I want to elevate Mike White to my honorable mentions. Like, I'm a Mike White stan. You know, I saw School of Rock on Broadway last week, and it was delightful. So, Mike White all the way. And I've not seen the emoji movie, so I feel like that colors my interpretation of it.
I actually feel like there are some comparisons to be made between Mike White and Sam, where, like, they're both sort of, like, under-edited social threats, but are also very snarky, especially to the camera. Like, I feel like even though Mike did considerably better in the game than Sam did, I feel like from a character perspective, there might be some lines to draw there.
Yes, Mike White with the wine moments, that was like peak great favorite player moment for Liana, because it was him like running into the bush and then him calling other people idiots and him rolling his eyes while he's like got his wine in his hands. Yeah, maybe he does that. I may have to rethink my top 10, but Mike White was definitely an honorable mention worthy character.
Yeah, plus Mike White is a cat, and Sam wore a cat shirt. So I think it's all just sort of like part of the grand universe. Everything is connected. Yeah.
Comparisons are getting out of hand. But the survey was very U.S. skewed. It only had one international person coming in 10th. It was Christian, Davey, Dom, Angelina, Wendell, Nick, Gabby, Chris Noble, and then Shawnee.
Yeah, and then Australian. And then Lisa right below her. And it is interesting, yeah. I guess when you look back at it, yeah, Shawnee was the much more prevalent person in Shinella. I don't know if it was just because she was going to go further or whether she just had, I don't know, more of a presence in confessional than Finella. But I do think it's interesting that we're going to talk about this later, actually coming up soon with like the who would you want to see come back. Shawnee finished considerably better in all these individual surveys than Finella did.
Mm-hmm.
She was a bigger character.
I think she was a bigger character, and I think she was the one who had the confessionals about, you know, playing the game. Like, her confessionals were more game-oriented than Finella's were, and I think that she was somebody who, you know, didn't really know how to play the game, but then really started to pick up how to play as they went along, and I think that she saw a lot of development, whereas Finella was just sort of her fun sidekick, and so Shawnee ends up being the person that stands out more.
All right, let's move on here. So we were asked for each of these five seasons, who would you like to play again? And you could choose up to three. Up to three. So let's see if we'll stick to those numbers. So
I actually did. How badly did you guys cheat in this?
I did three.
Okay.
I did three.
She says with ellipses. Yeah. Assumed. While Liana's doing some deleting, Shannon, who were the three Ghost Islanders that you think are most likely to play again?
So I had Dom, Michael Yoga, and Wendell. I tend to feel really good about winners coming back. Like, I just see the theme, like, whether it's, like, legends or winners or, you know, anything like that. I feel like they kind of, like, bought their way into another season. So, yeah, I tend to do winners. So I think Wendell there.
Go ahead.
I also only had three. And I had Dominic and Michael as well. But instead of Wendell, I actually had Kellen. I think she's somebody who I could definitely see coming back. I think she got a lot of screen time. And I think that, you know, there could be more to her story.
Yeah, I had Dominic and Michael as well. But I had Chris. Just because I feel like if you're talking about, like, Ghost Island 2, or, you know, they constantly bring back people who have, like, unfinished business nowadays. Like, I feel like Chris would be prime for, like, a second chances too. Where, like, He had everything going for him until the merge hit, and then he threw it all away on a gamble that lost his vote and his chance in the game. And he was such a big character. Again, he made my favorite characters of the year, that I think that whether or not he would be the same is one thing, but I think considering his run in Ghost Island in terms of his edit, he would be primed to bring back as well.
Yeah, my dream season is to bring back people who got voted out of their first tribal council, and I think he would be perfect for that. Yeah, I love that. It's like he has unfinished business and that he never did anything good in the game, and now we're going to give him the chance. I like that.
Yeah, with Chris, so Chris was in my honorable mentions, and I don't know if this is because I think he sort of feels a little one note as a character, and it's almost like, oh, okay, we've had fun with him as editors, so now we're over him and we're not going to bring him back. But I do think if it's wrapped up in the theme of, yeah, unfinished business some way, I think that that could be a way that he gets brought back.
And so I mean, they brought back Coach, they brought back Philip, like, I'm sure that like Chris Noble's not beyond them.
And so the audience is pretty much in line with us. They also said number one and number two definitively were Dom and Michael. And as for their third person, Kellen was able to squeak it out for that third spot. Chris came in fourth. Wendell came in fifth. And actually, Donathan came in sixth, someone who we surprisingly haven't talked about just because he was, I feel like, a big fan favorite force coming into the season, especially early on. But I don't know, maybe in the larger scheme of things is not as memorable as maybe some of those other characters.
Well, there's only so many people that Liana can list, really.
I don't know what you guys are thinking. Definitely Desiree is going to come back. Libby. I just feel really strongly about that.
Yeah, this was
yeah, Ghost Island's a really easy one to do because there was like five major characters and everyone else was just like
we pretty much mentioned all of them in our list.
Yeah, right.
So New Zealand, most likely to play again. So I went with JT, Adam, and Matt. I feel like Adam and Matt take it from like the, oh, they made it far enough and they were characters and players respectively. And JT, again, if you're going for this idea of like, he had, to your point, Shannon, that you made earlier, like a pretty good head on his shoulders and he was doing some fun stuff. He just happened to get taken out by an unfortunate set of circumstances. And I could see, should Survivor New Zealand ever come back, that they would, you know, give him another shot to really, you know, let his mayhem loose on the game like he was able to do in those early Chani votes.
Yeah, this question is either incredibly cruel or incredibly optimistic because Survivor New Zealand has been rested. Hashtag save Survivor NZ, hashtag Survivor NZ 2020. I did originally have Matt, but now I kind of feel like maybe the show wants to stay away from that whole mess of like the whole Matt Dave thing. It just was just a headache for everyone, I think. So I ended up going with JT, Dylan, and Lisa, as I said, the whole winner thing. And I could see a JT, Dylan, captain season. I do think Adam is also a pretty good pick, but I just really feel like JT Dylan captain season in 2020 is what I deserve, what we all deserve. Please hashtag, and I'm putting it out in the universe.
Yeah, the Dylan choice is super interesting just because I think he probably had one of the big, he had the biggest pre-merge edit, I think, even compared to someone like JT, just because unfortunately, due to being an outsider, he was just such a pivotal part of each and every vote that he was a part of that like we saw so much of him, which again, it was odd to see him like go out in episode 7 and you're sort of like, okay, now what? The big pariah from the group is gone.
Oh my God, except when we saw a lot of Dylan, it was like the same shot of him sitting by the water that they just kept reusing episode after episode after episode. That was absolutely lovely. I think for my three returning players, I actually had the same list as Mike. I had JT, Matt, and Adam. But I like, Shannon, what you're saying about this whole Dylan JT face-off thing with like, yeah, Lisa needs to come back as sort of the Cochrane type character to give advice to somebody and give out some goodies or whatever. You get to pick one as a reward. I think that that would be cool too.
I would also
survey agreed with both of you as well, so obviously Matt, JT, and Adam are like pretty much consensus favorites.
And though Lisa was not that far behind from Adam, but yeah, Matt was first, JT was second, Adam was third. They were all within like 20 votes of each other, and then followed by Lisa. What I will say, I don't know if this is an honorable mention, but if you know Survivor New Zealand is coming back and they do an all-stars thing, you know who I would not be surprised to see on there, quite honestly? Eve. Because Eve...
Very different reactions from me and Liana.
Well, because, I mean, Eve won the fan favorite. And I think that despite, you know, a little bit of, like, WTF from the rest of us, we're like, okay, who's Eve and what did she do? I feel like the producers could say, like, okay, she's really popular with the community, that they would be excited to see her back.
How many people are voting in Survivor New Zealand's fan favorite?
Who won fan favorite season one?
Jack, I believe, right? Oh, no, Sala did.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So those two come back and they lead. Okay. Four tribes. JT versus Dylan versus Eve versus Sala.
See, if we keep putting these ideas into it, I don't think it's ever going to come back. So I think we should just...
versus Adam's Botox.
We're trying to save Survivor New Zealand, not just like bury it further in the ground.
Well, let's move on to South Africa here. So my top three, Werner, Palesa, PK. And this was a really tough one because there were, again, such a great group of characters. But I sort of balanced here like character moments with, you know, actually wanting to come back versus having the level of gameplay that they could still wreak havoc if they do come back. And I feel like I sort of settled on these three. Liana, what did you pick?
Okay, I actually had the same. I had Werner and Palesa, but I had Josie as my third person, and I will tell you why. She has Wentworth upside, in my opinion. I think she's somebody who has a really great social game and could come back and be a super strong player, but just sort of ended up getting screwed over, like in that second swap. It's, you know, she's able to get Tevin out first, and then they lose another challenge, and, you know, it's between, I think, like her and PK, and I think Tony is maybe trying to decide. But anyway, so I think that she's somebody who has, like I said, a really strong social game and could come back and play a really great game. She just needs another opportunity. And so I know that Wentworth was a little bit of a like WTF-ish choice just because she had gone out in the pre-merge. I think Josie is the person for Survivor South Africa that fits that bill.
Yeah, I mean, as I think I've said it before, just like run the whole season again with the same 18 people and I would enjoy it. But my actual answer was Werner, Palesa, and PK, like you said, Mike, and the survey agreed with us. So that's actually really interesting to me because there are so many good characters. John, for example, like so many great people who could come back. And still, we agree, and the survey agreed that those three. And then I'm like, but also, are we like influencing it? Because we were the two hosts of it. So maybe it's just like a lot of groupthink right now. But I feel like those three would be pretty good.
Yeah. And those three were also, you know, I won't give the numbers, but they were by far the ones who, you know, were out at the top there. There were some others that maybe fell back by like got half as many votes. So it just really shows that I think those three really attracted. Though I do think I see what you're saying, Liana, that I feel like Josie, I could even put someone like Tevin in there as well in terms of like these pre-merge people. Hell yeah. I would love to see Ace make another go and just see like how insane he would be. Sheamus as well with a lot of these pre-merge flameouts. Like it's so crazy to me that Ace calls all this chaos and still just happened to go out because he was swap screwed. It's just a crazy finish for him.
The cast was too good.
Remember that time when they went to Rogs at the second tribal?
Oh my God.
So good.
Insane.
But I think that that's where, you know, this season has such a strong cast. And that's why for me, it was such a strong season. And that's why, you know, when we talk about players to bring back, I had a really, really hard time narrowing it down to the top three, which I did before coming onto this podcast. I definitely didn't do just now. And and I think that just goes to the strength of how many people I would want to see back and how many fun people we had.
All right,
17 of 18 could come back. Yeah.
Let's move on to Australian Survivor. Shannon, as our resident Australian, which three did you have to winnow down to bring back?
This was actually really tough. There are so many people in this season. It's crazy. I put Benji, Matt, and Lydia, and I'll still give an honorable mention of Sean. Lydia's coming back, guys. Just accept it.
Yeah, I had the exact same top three for the exact same reason that like Lydia was not the most magnetic personality, but production, I think, felt like they found a unicorn and like just an extremely physically adept beast of a woman. And I think that like that's not very found a lot of days on Survivor. And so I think you have to lock her in for a return appearance. Absolutely.
And Australian Survivor as well. So focused on the, you know, the physical side and the challenges and athletes. So I feel like she's a lock. And then only two people said Steve. And I feel like we should also just accept that will probably happen. And I have to say a few dozen people said Russell Hads. So it's like, is that to come back on Australian Survivor? Because I don't think we want him. Or is it to come back to any franchise? Because I don't know, this is just a bizarre thing for me.
Commando Steve back out to murder people. Oh, that'd be terrifying. I actually had a very similar list. So I had, in addition to Lydia, Sharn, and Benji. Benji is not somebody who, like, I personally would be particularly excited to see back, just because I feel like with all the chaos, it was almost exhausting for me to watch. But I think he could add the right flavor in a season. I just think he was somebody that the editors really seemed to like pulling, even though he had very repetitive confessionals and he caused a lot of chaos. So I can see him being brought back.
Yeah, I think that like the reason why we saw so much repetition out of him is because they loved to use him for those confessionals. I mean, he was in the Luke spot of like coming in and being braggadocious. So people love to use those sound bites. And I think that's sort of why he just became such a sort of an airtime occupant, especially towards the latter days of his thing. And I feel like it's sort of like not how you start, it's how you finish in terms of your edit. And the fact that he did just make such a big impression of the season, especially like from the contenders' perspective, considering how, you know, doomed they were from the beginning, makes me feel like he's a lock as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, the survey had him pretty high up. They had Benji, Shawnee, Matt, and Sean as a really clear top four, which would they bring back Shawnee? Like, I'd like to see it, but I don't know if the editors even realized like what gold they had with Shanella. Like, yeah, I mean, they almost should have gotten more than they did.
I would like to see it, but I also fear it's like, I don't want to bring her back. And then like my opinion of her drop, you know, like I wonder if Shawnee did a great job, but I wonder like, would she be able to do as well a second time around, considering that I feel like there's a good chance she would get targeted, you know, beforehand. I think she really benefited from like Anita's mafia of like being insulated by that group, and especially when you're led by such these big beefy boys that are like, you must get rid of all physical weakness, that like I think she was able to weather those storms and as a result like really cruise her way into a fantastic spot. I think we're gonna see Matt Rogers back. I don't know if we necessarily want to see Matt Rogers back, especially the way that he sort of finished off the Survivor season with essentially turning everyone against Sharn in the end. But I feel like it's an eventuality just because, again, of the role he played in this season.
Oh, my God. I need somebody to find me that picture. Remember when in Australian Survivor in the season when all the boys were naked and you could see their butts? If someone could find that and send that to me, that would be lovely. Thank you.
You are now asking people to send you naked photos on that podcast.
Okay, but they're tasteful. It's from TV.
All right, let's finish off here. Maybe another tough choice here. Three people you would want to, who are probably going to return from Survivor, David versus Goliath. Liana, what do you have? Or are you still thinking about butts?
I think I can move on. So one, the person that I immediately popped into my head was Christian. Yeah, I thought it was so funny during the season when he was talking about, you know, you only get an opportunity to play this once. I was like, just you wait, Christian. I can definitely see if he can get away and come back. I think the producers would love to have him back. The other two people that I had on my list were Angelina, just because I think she is such a crazy character. She's somebody I could totally see coming back. And then I put Davey, and I think that that's a little bit from my own bias of just liking Davey so much, but I think that he also I know that he was an alternate that was chosen this season, but I think he gave a lot of gold, and he could definitely be seen back in another season.
Yeah, I did Christian and Angelina as well, and then I did Nick because there's going to be an all-winner season sometime soon, and Nick is like definitely coming back for that, I feel.
So you're just calling your shot ahead of time.
Yeah, because like when they do that legend season or that all-winner season, I feel like it might be like sometime soon, and also they like tend to look back at like really recent seasons, so like the winners are gonna stand out, but there's a lot of good choices here as well.
Yeah, I put Christian in there, I put Davey in there just because I'm thinking back to at the David versus Goliath finale when he got like this special interview with Jeff Probst in the middle of the finale. Like, I feel like that's a good signifier that you know you made an impact as a contestant when Jeff has to actually sort of highlight you at the finale even though you went out in sixth place. So I feel like, and to your point, Leon, of like, I think production loves him, and I think they're excited they had him on this season. I put Gabby as my third. Mm-hmm. I think she's a super logical choice. I do understand if you're talking about like people in her quote unquote archetype, there are people who might be coming back, including this next season, who sort of fill that. But I think that she ticks a lot of boxes in terms of what production would like. She's strategic. She has a lot of emotions for the camera. She's a good character. You know, she's able to form tight bonds and storylines like with Christian. So I feel like she fills a good spot of someone. It meant that I had to leave Angelina out, but I also don't know. Do we think Angelina would want to play Survivor again?
Yes.
I think she would. I think give her a little bit of time, and I think that she would want to come back for some sort of like trying for redemption type deal. Like, I could see that being something she would want to do. But right away, I don't know. I mean, I know that they're, she talked a lot about the editing, the way that some of the things were portrayed. But I could see eventually, yeah, her wanting to come back.
Yeah, I don't feel like why she wouldn't want to. Like, I don't feel like she was complained by the edit as much as someone like Natalie. Obviously, she did raise her hand in the finale when Jeff asked, but it was more of just like a half wave. You know, like if she never wanted to come back, her hand would have been right up there.
Well, I think she still wanted the jacket. That's why she sort of like brown-nosed Natalie a bit.
She was still doing the jacket play. She was at home with all her own jackets, but she specifically really wants Natalie's jacket.
Such
a great jacket.
So I think that, the survey responders were in agreement with you too. They put Christian number one, Angelina number two, Davey number three, and that was a pretty significant part of the answers. Gabby ended up being number four, but it was a very, very far fall down. And Pat ends up getting about 10% of the votes overall, which, again, considering how much he was, pushing for that, if we end up getting a Philippines too, I think it makes sense.
And Natalie as well. And then only then Nick. Like, that's crazy to me. Like, right. He won. Like, if he's like behind Pat.
All right. So let's move on here to some Survivor superlatives. So in true yearbook fashion, which apparently, according to the Big Brother version of this, is only in the U.S. and does not exist in other countries. I don't know, Shannon, did you have superlatives in your yearbook when you went to school?
I don't think we did. Yeah, like I learned what superlatives were through the B&B.
We're educational.
So we went through some superlatives for these players, and what we'll do is we'll again go around the horn, we'll give our own answers, and these are players from any season, so we're not segmenting things anymore, and then we'll see what the audience said. First, most screwed by a twist. Shannon, who do you have?
So I checked the survey and I was the only person out of all the responders to give this response, and I still feel very strongly about it. I said Annalise, because yeah, that final three level final three might not have been a final three if Martinez hadn't quit. They didn't really seem to know if it would be a final three and she would have won. And there are some other players who I feel like they were drawing dead anyway. Like, yes, they were screwed by a twist and we'll talk about the survey results, but it's like, would they have won? Whereas Annalise was incredibly close and this twist did come through. Like, I can't believe no one else said this. I feel very strongly about it.
I think it's just because, like, maybe it's because it was not as built up as the Micronesia final two, where they all prominently on camera said this is a final three. Oh crap, it's a final two. Whereas this one was a bit more understated. I don't know if people necessarily count that as a twist. Like, I guess what I constituted as a twist was something that it was one thing that you expected and then a completely different thing happened. Like, I'm talking swaps. I'm talking, things that had never happened before happening. Something like the fire making tiebreaker, I don't call getting screwed over by a twist because I feel like that's already known. And while that's a twist, it's not like as, I don't know, it doesn't really screw you over as much, in my opinion.
But, like, swaps are going to happen. And then, obviously, I do think that is getting screwed if you get swaps screwed. But, like, we were having arguments about whether this was going to be a final three or final two. In talking to the players, they didn't really know what was going on. I think it's a bit difficult because it is, like, a rebooted Survivor South Africa. So it's not even like, okay, well, there's a lot of precedent there with, like, US Survivor where it's final three after final three and then it's eventually a final two. But I still don't think it's really what they were expecting. And it was something new that happened, like, right up until it happened, they didn't really know what was going to happen. So to me, that was quite surprising. In terms of, like, yeah, fire, not to get too much into the survey results, but Dom was up there as someone who got screwed by fire. And it's like, is fire now, like, a twist? Or is it just, like, part of the game?
I wonder if those responses weren't the fire. It was the tiebreaker at the final three.
That's not a twist either. That's also part of the game for me.
Right. Yeah, but yeah.
That's how it's decided. Like, how else would it be decided? We already did this in the B&B finale.
They fight for it?
Yeah.
Did Dom necessarily win that? Like, I mean, I assumed it was because of fire. If it's the last jury member, like, I don't see that as a twist either. Surely a surprise final two is more of a twist than either of those things.
Well, no, I mean, I think, it's going to be either a final two or a final three. Like, I think when you're playing the game, you can see one of those two outcomes potentially happening. And I think something like my personal answer was Dan, the idol nullifier, because that's something that, it's something that is completely unforeseen. And there's no way, like, you can't even have a discussion of, oh, okay, so when I play my idol and there's the idol nullifier, when you have literally no idea that something like this could exist. So that's sort of where I see the difference between the two, where the final two, final three, it's got to be one of those two, probably. And you could make an educated guess as to which one you think it might be. But the idol nullifier, like, what?
So why do we say Suri was screwed in Micronesia? Because of the precedent, I guess, that South Africa didn't have. But the thing is that the players didn't know or think that it would be a final two.
Yeah, but I wouldn't necessarily even say that she was screwed by a twist necessarily. Like, this is superlative is most screwed by a twist. And I don't know. I mean, that didn't, like, 100% stand out to me as a twist necessarily. Like, I feel like she got, that sucked and she kind of got screwed. But I don't necessarily think it was a twist. This might be just splitting hairs, but
Yeah, to me, if a swap is a twist, then like final two for the final three, like it's all part of like the game structure, so it's still a twist. Like, I like, okay, so overwhelming consensus from the survey was Dan, as you said, and like obviously his was the most unforeseen, and I just try to look at it like unforeseen, and he was definitely the most of that, but then also like, and how much did it inhibit you winning the game, whereas like Dan was never going to win, I don't think, and Annalise was like pretty close to winning. So when I like added that together, I had Annalise coming up on top, but Dan's obviously a really good answer as well.
I had Dan up there as well. I had a couple of like, again, honorable mentions that I won't necessarily read off, but actually the one that I ended up going with, I went with Werner because of that damn juror removal twist, which I hate so much, and I hate that it's linked to my favorite seasons of the past few years each and every time. But I still am a bit sour over the fact that Werner ended up getting removed. And again, if you're talking about something that's unforeseen, I mean, he couldn't have prepared for that. He had no idea to sort of say, well, there might be a juror removal, so I guess I better, you know, suck up to these people in case I get blindsided and then I wind up on the jury and then they want to remove me anyway. I was sad to not see Werner, the big Survivor superfan, get to cast his vote at the end. So maybe that's sort of like me translating my saltiness into my pick here.
Yeah, aww. But I think Werner said that, like, he's okay with it. He's like, he got voted out. Like, that's a million times worse than not getting to, like, cast a jury vote, especially when you have to cast a jury vote possibly for Tom. Like, he was saved from himself. Now, he would have voted for John. But either way, I think a lot of those people would have been wanting to get removed from the jury. Yeah, there's definitely a lot there. I think Dan was, like, hundreds of votes.
Yeah, Dan was by far the most. Dom came in second with, like, barely double digits. Below him was Michael. I guess we're talking about the split tribal council. Then John Hennigan, which I don't think was a twist unless you count playing idols as a twist.
Yeah, idols twist? Like, what a twist. Where are we? What is
and
life?
Then
like,
below him was Dave, which I guess, again, I don't think it was an intended twist for him and Matt to be cast on the same season. But I guess if it does, you could argue that Matt inadvertently spilling the beans at Ponderosa screwed him over. Two people who I thought
inadvertent is a strong word.
Well, two people who I thought would get more votes, Stephanie Johnson and especially James Lim. I feel like they both got pretty swap screwed. James especially, yeah, considering how good of a position he was in.
Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of it was just overshadowed by, for me, you know, I guess it goes back to what I define as a twist and whether or not I think that being swap screwed is a twist. I guess the reason why Dan stood out to me and I think stood out to a lot of the listeners is because it was just so like crazy. And, you know, you never could have predicted that this was now going to be something that was introduced into the game. And it just kind of sucks.
Yeah, completely understandable. Let's move on here to.
Oh, wait. Sorry, before we move on. Okay, so remember how Dan had that t-shirt that was F fake friends and then it had the little guy who was like had the Wi-Fi coming out of his butt?
Yeah.
How could we forget?
So I was listening to some music the other day and there's some
Chris Noble's rap.
that is on repeat, but I took a brief break from that to listen to something else. And it was a G-Eazy BB Rexha song. And there was a lyric called F fake friends. There's a whole song called FFF and it's F fake friends. It's the whole theme of the song. I think that that's where he got it from. I don't know if that explains the Wi-Fi coming out of the butt. I didn't listen to the lyrics close enough, but I feel like it cracked the code a little bit. And I needed to mention that because I had no one else to tell. So
do we think Dan's just a big BB Rexha fan?
Yeah. Obviously, you know, he's like liking everything on Twitter. So he probably liked some Big Brother stuff inadvertently and then watched BB Rexha and now made a fake friends t-shirt.
She's his kryptonite.
Do you think he's in some like legal problems now with copyright infringement now that we know?
No,
that, like,
that's why. That's
not
why
only he was the shirt terrible, but didn't even come up with it by himself.
But that's why he went with FCUK is because it's not exactly what she said.
Ah, see, slightly different. It's yeah, it's the the ice baby, the vanilla ice of the Queen song. So it's the same thing.
He'll have to hand over all the money he made through those shirts. $18. Oh, yeah.
I don't even know if it's that much.
All right,
please give us $5.
Let's move on here to best hero. Shannon, who in your mind of these players in 2018 was the best hero?
Yeah, there's a lot of good options here. I went with Werner.
Okay, interesting.
I feel like it speaks for itself. Like, I mean, I think I tweeted at the time that he got voted out asking if I could take the day off work. To me, no one really represented that hero thing as much. And like, even though he was pogonging people and him winning actually would have been like kind of a boring outcome in hindsight, especially compared to what we got. Like, I was just rooting for him all the way. And yeah, biggest hero for me.
So for my biggest hero, I said Christian, and I want to say Christian because he is somebody who essentially is going down a very similar career path, or went down a career path that I'm sort of following. And I have absolutely no idea how this man was able to take off time and go play Survivor. Like, I really don't understand. I work a lot and it's super competitive and it's really intense. And the fact that, you know, I actually talked to him a little bit about this, the way he timed it, that was what makes him my hero. Apart from the fact that he also was really great on the show, and it was just so nice to see somebody from, you know, a similar line of work and a similar sort of social group to me be on the show. And I know a lot of people say that, oh, super fan, you know, it's exciting to see him, but somebody who like goes down this academic path, gets his PhD, then goes on to be a faculty member, like that was super cool to see. And so for me, he was my hero.
Yeah, it's interesting. Aww. That I think like
no,
it's
Ryan.
It's always interesting when you, especially when you look to like cast like heroes versus villains, of like what defines a hero. And I think what it boils down to is a lot of likability. And I feel like Christian has that in spades. And you can sort of also couple that with this idea of likability on top of like playing out of an underdog position sometimes, you know, like prevailing over the obstacles and proving victorious. And that's why my hero of the year was Shawnee, just because I feel like she had a great personality. There were a couple times when she was really in a bad situation. I'm thinking about like after the swap, when it's her and Tegan, and then it's just her at the merge, when you have Robbie getting voted out and she gets pulled into the Mighty Ducks, like, she had this consistent underdog story and the personality on top of it that just really endeared her to me, in my opinion. So that's why she's the best hero to me. Though I was contemplating Christian, I was contemplating Davey, I was contemplating Michael as well, because I think if you're talking about like one of the biggest underdog stories of the year, you have to go with him considering how many times he was in the hole.
You really like Michael, don't you?
I think looking back on him, like I do understand at the time we were like, ugh, like, Michael fever needs to die down. The fact that he was like basically spoken to than more than half the cast of Ghost Island at the reunion. But like, I think his storyline was one of the biggest parts of the season, like it or, you know, like it or hate it.
Mm-hmm. I was totally into Michael fever, and I still feel like you're way OTT, Mike.
Maybe I'm just finally happy that there's like a Michael on Survivor who I really, really enjoy. No offense to Michael.
Well, Mike White. Mike White.
I like
who
Mike
was the best survivor, Mike.
Yeah, but Mike was the original one to take my heart. So like, it's really tough to determine who was the best Mike of 2018. That could be another podcast on its own.
Well, the survey overwhelmingly said Christian, and I mean like overwhelmingly, and then Davey. Both good answers. There's a lot of, I mean, the characters, all 100 characters, including Russell Hans this year, are just gold.
let me look. I don't think. Yes, one person said Russell Hans was the best hero of the year.
He's my hero.
Some people are just obviously trolling.
You never know. It could have been Russell himself. You're not entirely sure. But let's move over to the other side of the yin-yang, as it were. Let's talk about best villain. I want to start here because I know my pick is going to be off the beaten path. And I really wanted to pick Angelina. But for me, a villain is someone who you are so, so satisfied to see upended. And for me, that was Zach from Survivor, Australian Ooh. Survivor.
Oh, that's such a good one.
That's really good. I didn't even thought about that.
He was such a freaking jackhole. And he still was after the show, so you can't even blame the edit. And just his, you know, him being so cocky and confident and basically getting overthrown by the people he deemed as so weak that they were essentially written off as competitors on this season, I feel like was such poetic justice. I do understand that some people like, you know, love to hate aspects of their villains, and Zach is more so a hate to hate person, but just because he had the most complete story arc for a villain, I kind of had to pick him because he was so over the top.
Yeah, I think for me, like, I don't know if I was enjoying it. You know, it was like, I think you said, like, love to hate. Those are my villains. Zach, it was just like, I don't even like that you're rewarded with being on the show to begin with, you know? Like, it was entertaining at first, and like, the worse that it got on, it was just too much.
He was so misogynistic, but I think he went from a love to hate to hate to hate. Yeah, over the season, where finally I was just like, boy, bye. I was over him. He needed to go, but I hated him so much. And so it was really nice to see him get his comeuppance. Oh, man, that guy blows. Okay, for my villain, I actually picked Brian Lake. And part of this also has to do with so the first 15 minutes of the season were put out like before the season aired. And I watched those first 15 minutes and I was like, Brian's going to win. I was like dead set on the fact that Brian was going to win. And then he goes through these like character developments where I'm like trying to justify his game because I was still convinced he was going to win. But at the same time being like, oh my God, Grubby, you're a terrible person. So it was very conflicting for me. And so he turned into this sort of villain that I love to hate because also of this added, I totally thought that he was going to win element to it. So he was the person that was my love to hate and my best villain for 2018.
Yeah, I mean, I could never see a Hawks player as a villain, but I get objectively what you're saying.
Especially from the first 15 minutes when it was like, what, didn't he like push Heath to the side during that first challenge in order to slide ahead and get the reward?
But there was
a lot of issues with that. You should watch some of his AFL games.
There was a lot of camera time on Brian. And I remember thinking he's being shown, but he's not super prominent. And this is totally what a winner is going to get so that people remember that they exist. But it's not over the top. This is my Edric thing talking too. So it was a very complicated season for me in terms of winner picks.
Yeah, I had Chris Noble, but for me, I do think that Angelina is just like the objectively correct answer. She was the overwhelming favorite in the survey, followed by Natalie, Benji, Bradley, and then Chris Noble, who I think there's a lot of good answers. Chris Noble, so much hilarity there, but I don't know if I can go past Angelina thinking about it.
Yeah, well, because the weird thing about Angelina is like Angelina lies in the category, like unlike somebody like Bradley, who's a dick to be a dick, Angelina lies in the category of like, I'm doing good things, but they don't come off as good things to other people. So it's like it's like casting Coach as a villain on Heroes versus Villains, where they're an unintentional villain, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I think in terms of Chris Noble, maybe it's just because I loved him that he wasn't a villain for me, because I was kind of on Chris Noble's side through all the buffoonery, even though it was complete nonsense. So I don't know if I would categorize him as a villain, but I can totally see why people would and why they would vote for him.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I believe Chris and Dominic came within like 10 responses of each other. So it sort of like depends on which side do you choose. And as a result, the other person becomes villainized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So let's move on here. Best confessional giver. I have a feeling there's going to be a pretty large consensus response as to this. But Shannon, what did you say?
Yeah, I actually gave Jean. I love her confessionals. I really, really enjoy that it was a woman who won this answer for me. I think just her brand of humor. She's not really like a confessional giver that I've ever seen before. She was hilarious. And yeah, I feel good about that answer.
I actually think that's a really good answer. I thought that she was really well-spoken in confessionals, and I think that it made me believe in her game more than maybe I should have, because she was so well-spoken in the confessionals. Like, yeah, she totally knows what's going on. Meanwhile, she's being blindsided and has no idea what's going on. So for my answer for best confessional giver, Christian is the standout answer. So I wrote Christian for me, and then I wrote ... not Benji. So
anybody,
you hated Benji's confessionals.
Anybody but Benji.
Yes. Oh my god, take out the king. Yes, Benji, okay.
Yeah, I put Christian as well, but as a second, I would probably put Tom just because of this super dramatic, not all sharks live in the sea. Like, all these, like, stupidly over-the-top ways that he delivers everything with such gravitas really endeared him to me. So, yeah, I mean, in the survey, Christian, no surprise, the runaway answer. Number two, though, Shawnee. Which is interesting. I guess I just had forgotten some of her confessionals, but I thought about more of her as a player in the game rather than in confessionals. Davey third, Dominic fourth, and then rounding out the top five is Adam. So some international love there. I'm happy about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was tough with these superlatives, like a lot of US bias. So like if Shawnee's coming second, that's some good stuff, even though Christian was like very much first.
Well, I think it's funny. It's like all the US voters voted for Christian, and that sort of opened up the field for other people to sort of slip in there.
Which I feel like is understandable. I mean, when you're one of the only players to get like time-lapse confessionals dedicated to you, or they show you knocking over pieces of the scenery, like that's just absolute gold. And I feel like it's partly burgeoned by the fact that they did have those editing ticks that make his confessionals so memorable, but he just has this enthralling way of speaking that just draws you in. And again, it makes it understandable why he was such a good social player in that regard. But yeah, he is one of my favorite confessionalists in a very, very long time on Survivor.
Mm-hmm. And he worked in the word sloshed, so he deserves it.
All right, let's move on here. Best challenge beast. So we talked about this before. I personally went with Lydia just because, in my opinion, a challenge beast is someone who it's not just like a couple of individual immunities, like, it's challenge after challenge. This person is just crushing each and every aspect. And that was Lydia, to the point where it seemed almost superhuman, the thing she was able to do. She was essentially able to talk Robbie through an endurance challenge despite Sam's consternation. You know, she always seemed like someone especially in those Australian Survivor challenges where they were also individual, of like the face off against this other person. You could tell the look on everyone's faces when they had to face off against Lydia was basically like sacrificing a point to the other team. She was just an absolute beast, which made it completely understandable why Shane just immediately organized a coup against her from the bench.
Oh my gosh. She was my pick as well. She's such a badass and so strong and so amazing. I mean, she was actually somebody who I thought might win the season because I thought that she, you know, she's somebody who is a really a strong worker. I mean, she's a freaking Olympian, for God's sakes. Like, she's somebody who would kill in the challenges. And I think, you know, because there were other strong men, I thought that they would stand out above her. But her challenge prowess, I mean, just stood out above the rest and really ended up, you know, being the reason she went home at the merge. Oh, so good.
Yeah, well, at the point where you're that much more threatening than your cast of athletes, like, no one can compare. And even with the US bias in the survey, Nick beat Lydia by 3 votes and the recency bias. I mean, he had just won the most recent 3 immunity challenges. So I get why he got the votes. But Lydia is the winner. Like,
yeah,
she is an Olympian. Like, no one else can come close. And then some other people, you know, rounding it up were Chris Noble, Alec, Wendell. So, yeah. But Lydia, she beats all these guys. Like, she was the best challenge beast.
I'm going to push back. I don't understand why Nick got so many votes. Just because...
Yeah, it's the recency bias.
I don't remember Nick for his physical game. That's what I think about when I think of challenge beasts. It's like, when you think of a person, what's the first thing that comes to mind? And for Lydia, that's just her extreme athletic ability. Nick, I'm not necessarily thinking about, like, hey, remember when he was able to keep that ball in some motion? Or when he was able to pour the water into the tube? Like... This Lydia impressed me more. So I'll take my hand at the gavel a bit. I'll judge some of those people that put Nick as the challenge beast. No offense to Nick.
Well, it's interesting because the superlatives were like, it showed a lot of the US skew, obviously. And for the other ones, like best confessional and best villain, whatever, like they all rally behind one person. But in terms of the two US seasons, obviously, besides Nick, there was like one win per like almost everyone at the merge for David versus Goliath. So that's like a difficult thing to do. Ghost Island was a long time ago. No one really remembers it. But Chris Noble was getting votes. Wendell was getting votes. Like, there wasn't someone who stood out for the US season. So if you didn't have Lydia, like, who were you going to vote for? I think that if everything had been watched equally, Lydia would be getting the kind of votes for this that Christian was getting for best confessional.
Yeah,
I completely agree. I mean, I think also because she was able to stand out. I mean, you think about the people around her, like Brian Lake and Matt Rogers and Murderer Commando Steve, like all of those people just stood out as crazy challenge beasts too. And she was still able to rise above that. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. And I think that it's also to be said that this spread is so much more even than any other question. Like you said, Shannon, like all the other questions, one person pretty much stands out, but like, Nick got 77 votes. Lydia got 74. Chris Noble got 68. Alec got 61. So it's super evenly spread. And I think it speaks to your point about how, especially with U.S. Survivor, there's so many different like challenges, I think, test some interesting sets of circumstances that they might not necessarily in the past or even compared to international editions. So I think it's even tough to compare like challenge beasts across the seasons, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially because when you think about, you know, a lot of challenges, for example, in David versus Goliath, were like, oh, okay, time this ball and balance this and stand on this. Like, they were all very similar, whereas in other seasons, and you have, like, you know, challenges that require a different skill set other than just balancing mental strength and ball handling. So, yeah.
I will also say, if we're giving an award to a season for best challenges, it's still got to be Australian Survivor for me. They are still, in my opinion, the go-to for challenges, just because... Even though there were a lot, especially in the pre-merge, of one-on-one showdowns, there was still a lot of really fun, intricate stuff going on. Nothing to match the charades challenges, but still enough uniqueness going on there that it stood out in comparison to the others.
I agree.
All right, let's move
on.
Go ahead.
Yeah, most likely to win a returning season. This was an interesting one.
Yeah, so this is sort of, I guess, like, assuming what you put down for who to play again, who do you think is most likely to win out of that bunch? So I was between a couple here, but I ended up going for Davey because I think that Davey, again, just sort of has everything going for him. He's fairly physical, and I'm assuming if he, you know, had more advanced notice to go out into the island, he'd get even more in shape. He has this great likability to him. He has social skill to really, as we talked about before, have this game awareness to make decisions on his own behalf rather than sort of, you know, just on behalf of a group. And I feel like he landed in sixth. People might not necessarily remember that compared to people who made it to the end of the game or, you know, had big flame outs. So I feel like he's in a perfect spot where if he comes back again, he won't be as big of a threat and he has the skill set to make it really far, if not win.
Yeah, I actually really love that answer. I hadn't actually thought about it. It was the consensus survey answer. And yeah, I think that's great. I had said PK, who obviously won't be seen as a threat when he goes back, probably will be seen as like a very scary, unreliable factor that might need to be dealt with. But beyond that, I think like since then he's really studied the game and he's pretty clear about like where he went wrong. And he has a really good view, I think, of his own game. So I think he could come out and surprise people on a second run.
Well, I would love to see both of those people play again. But I think for the person that stood out to me, well, okay, I'm going to cheat. Okay, so I'm picking no. They all. Yes, please. And they all stood out to me for the same reason. Kara, Annalise, and Josie, because I thought that they would all be players who would come back and have super strong social games and be able to, you know, slide under a radar. I mean, I know Kara made it close. But I think with now having played the game and having experience with the format, how the game is played, and just having sort of the emotional understanding of what's happening as you're going through these votes is going to be just so valuable for them. And I could definitely see any one of them coming back and winning their season.
Yeah, I mean,
kind of be mad at the cheating. Those are all really good answers.
Yeah, and I think that especially, again, we talked about Annalise being one vote away. Annalise and Kara arguably might have been one vote or one challenge away from winning the game. And so I think that they could definitely make a crack at, like, again, they'll be underestimated. I don't think they have any sort of flaws that are speaking against them of getting eliminated in the pre-merge. And so, like, if you put them on another season, if they want to go, I think that, you know, they'd have a good chance of going far. So, yeah, looking at the survey results, Davey was the number one pick, but Kara came in second, followed by Kellen, which I can see. I think Kellen, you know, even though she wasn't really in the top 10 players, I think she had a good head on her shoulders in terms of especially like becoming wise of Dom and Wendell. She just wasn't able to get the votes together, followed by Dom and then followed by Gabby, which I know there's been some talk as well. I think Rob had said that like she would do super well in a returning season. Mm. So Werner was number six. I feel that makes sense, but I do wonder, you know, if there is a Survivor South Africa returning season, how much Survivor South Africa had these other people watch? Because if they did, he's essentially like the Rob Cesternino of Survivor South Africa at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I worry for him. That's a tough run.
Aww.
Our final superlative here, best blindsided. And we delineated this by the name of the person who got blindsided. Liana, who did you pick?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So I think I ended up going with Matt because the 3-2-1 vote for me was just so lovely and so wonderful. And I could just keep replaying it over and over in my mind that I just had to go with Matt. I mean, what Lisa did was wonderful. And that was, I think, the best blindside of the year.
Yeah, it's interesting. You went with Matt Hancock. I went with Matt Rogers.
Oh,
just because I think that there were so many great factors coming in. The fact that Sharon had an idol and played it, and then Benji convinces her in the moment to play it on herself instead of Matt. The fact that Matt had an idol and also chose not to play it, and the fact that it was a like super close 5-4 vote as well. It just had all these chaotic mix-ins that combined. It's just like, in my opinion, the best tribal council of the season, bar none. And that's the thing that I'm really going to remember from this season. There were just so many mistakes being made at once, coupled with some really great last minute gameplay from Benji that just sort of mixed together into this fantastic meal of a tribal council.
Yeah, I also had Matt Rogers, and I probably would have had Matt Hancock second. So like the battle of the Mats here, both incredible blindsides. The Matt Rogers vote, it's like, yeah, thinking about it, the pre-merge of Australian Survivor was really poor. The post-merge was amazing to the point where we kind of forget how bad it was. And it's votes like this that make you forget how many like medivacs we, there was four episodes in 1 week where like Jenna went and Damien went and it was a slog, but this made it all worth it. So the Matt Rogers boot was amazing. Then the survey said John, which I also probably would have put in the top three there, like incredible blindside. Mm-hmm. And then it had Dan, Matt Rogers and Chris Noble. Like even thinking about it, there's the Natalia boot was awesome. Werner using the idol so that Katinka went, like, that's crazy. Also, the Sharnay boot where there were so many so many idols. That's the kind of blindside where even the players are being blindsided because they don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, where Sharnay went home with, what, one vote, I think, because three idols were played?
Yeah, it like, honestly, just looking back, like, this question was one of the hardest, and it just looked back on what an incredible year this was. That's why I had to give the year a 9, because there was infinite blindsides that you would just look back on and be like, that's an all-time moment. Like, that's very impressive.
Yeah, and I also give credit to a blindside that was not sort of, you know, propelled along by twists or idols. Werner's was just like one of those classic, okay, we have four people, there are no idols, let's just sort of work it out. And the fact that Werner was almost able to pull off a 2-1-1 in his favor in a year of 2-1-1s that happened in all the other international Survivor seasons is just I mean, it really made that final four episode so compelling when we thought it wasn't going to be whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on here to our last couple of questions before we wrap things up. Which player is most similar to yourself? Now, Shannon, you talked about this before we came on, and I thought we could actually, in true B&B fashion, turn this into a bit of a game. So maybe what we can do is, like, I don't know, play 20 questions in true Christian style, where we can try to figure out who each person is, unless you have a guess or you want to do it another way.
That's a great idea.
I think we should just guess based on who we think we are as people. This could be very insulting.
All right, who wants to start? Who wants to be up for guessing?
Okay, I'll go.
Okay, no, you no. I'm happy not to do it because I don't.
Okay, I'll go first. Who am I?
Okay, is your person a man or a woman?
A woman.
I'm just gonna guess.
All right,
I said Helen.
Oh damn it! Yeah.
Oh my god.
I did.
I really know you, Liana.
Okay, I did. Yeah, you do really know me better than I know myself. I have something I have to tell you, Shannon. I didn't actually have a top 10 list. I just made it up as I went. Yeah, so I said Kellen, and I picked Kellen because she was somebody who, you know, is really smart and I think is really capable and did end up having a lot of emotions come out and while she was playing. And I think that I would want to say, oh, I wouldn't be emotional that way, but I totally would be. She was going through a lot of life changes at the same time that I was. And she was just somebody who I really related to. So I had to pick Kellen.
All right.
I'm impressed with myself.
Yeah,
I'm impressed with you too. That's actually really freaking impressive.
All right. Then I'll put my, let's see, Shannon, if you can go 2 for 2. Who did I pick?
Ooh, there's a lot of options for you, Mike. Like,
yeah, so many nerdy white men on Survivor this year.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to be. Okay, I'm going to do it. I'll just say it. I'm going to say Jacob Derwin.
That's actually a pretty good guess. And it's probably actually how I would assume my own Survivor game would go. No offense to Jacob, but no, I did not say Jacob Derwin. Though actually a surprising amount of our survey responders also said Jacob Derwin.
The survey responses were pretty funny. Like, a lot of people said Bradley. I'm like, what are you guys seeing yourself? I don't know. Oh, maybe Sam?
Ding, 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 ding. That is correct.
Okay, wait. I literally have a message. Okay, because I was trying to think earlier, because we had talked about this before, and I was like, God, when things would pop up as we were talking about people, I said Sam crossed with Jacob. It's literally what I have written down. So I was half right.
Just call me Sam Cub. That's who I am, essentially, in a Survivor player. Yeah, I mean, I feel like Sam is somebody who had a pretty good head in the game, but I think he was mostly there, at least from an edit perspective, for the snark and for the goofiness of it all. And honestly, the way I would probably play is like a complete troll of the game and just being a big old goofball, which I feel like Sam was. Especially in the moments that you talked about before, Liana. So I feel like that hues closest to me personally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guess me.
Oh, man, I'm going to say Tess from Survivor
Monica!
New Zealand.
I hate you, Mike. but Liana did get it right. Liana, we've got such a thing going right now.
Oh my God, I'm really loving us.
It was only when I had to answer this question that I realized that I relate to Monica, and maybe that's why I'm so defensive of her. I'm really learning a lot about myself.
I'm glad the survey brought up some personal things for you. Who needs therapy when you have surveys?
Yeah, come on. We can do this. Yeah, well, okay. So you relate to her because you feel that, you know, you guys are very similar, Shannon. Is that what you think?
Well, we're both Australian. We're both immigrants. We're both in the beauty industry, similar demographic. I don't know. I just see bits of myself in her. But then I feel like there's parts of maybe like Gabby in terms of like the more like nerdy superfan writer kind of thing. So I feel like I'm like a Gabbica.
Gabbica.
I love that Ethan Hawke movie, Gabbica.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking of Gabby, you know, it was obviously a very scattered set of results because it was across 100 players, but the majority, or the plurality of people, said they related to Gabby the most. It was very David versus Goliath centric, obviously because of recency bias. Christian was up there, Davey was up there, Nick was up there a large amount as well. Bradley got a few, Kellen got a few, as mentioned before, and Jacob Derwin getting a nice bump as well. So it's pretty much, understandably, given our audience base, I think those super fans who ended up getting the vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that makes, but I feel like all the girls just put it all on Gabby, and the men had a lot of options.
All right, final question of this survey and of this podcast. What's the thing you'll remember most about 2018 in Survivor? Now, this can be something in general. This could be one specific moment. Really, the world is your oyster here to shuck. So, Liana, what did you pick as what you remember most about 2018 in Survivor?
Oh my God. This was really hard. And I'm pretty sure I've listed some things that stood out to me as we've gone along. But really, I think it goes back to Werner eating the clue. He ate a clue. Oh my God. Like, because I remember thinking he was like, I have to dispose of it. And you're like, oh, okay. What's he going to do? Eat it. Eat it. He ate it. He ate it. He ate it. He ate a clue. Yes.
If you repeat it enough, people will eventually remember it for all of time.
But they will, like, never forget.
It was insanity. And this person who ends up going to be arguably the best, I mean, I think we've proven it here, and I think the listeners have proven it too, the best player on that season, one of the most iconic players on that season, for being a strong strategic player who built the bus, and he's also eating clues along the way. Who would have thought that the bus was powered by Survivor Idol clues? So good.
Very, very environment efficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just, you know, can't rely on fossil fuels anymore. We have to use all of those clues. Oh, it could also run on like the crap at Ghost Island. I think, yeah. You know, it all fits together.
All right, Shannon, what about you? What will you remember most from 2018 for Survivor?
Well, I said the reign of PKOS. Hashtag blue must fall. On a more personal level, I think I'll remember just everything in terms of like international Survivor, obviously becoming an RHAP host. Not a lot I'll forget, actually, I don't think. It was, yeah, pretty amazing year in terms of Survivor, in terms of my relationship with the show changing. And, yeah, absolutely loved it. Some of the responses, though, were hilarious. I like the person who said, I remember how bad Ghost Island was. Come on. That's really glass half empty. There was a lot of positive stuff there. Yeah, Mike, what will you remember?
So the one I'm thinking off the top of my head is probably Jacket Gate. Because as someone who loves character moments, that's just like an amazing microcosm. And it's just like a fantastic story told in one episode. And it speaks perfectly to what we saw in Natalie's character and what we were going to see with Angelina's character. Because I feel like we saw inklings of Angelina with like the, oh, I get discounts, you know, at restaurants. I'm a good convincer. And then to just have that moment, just be the touchstone to start Angelina off sort of on her own path of zaniness was amazing. To have Nick and Mike react in the moment was great. I know that was a big response of a lot of things, but I would say, I don't know, I'm weighing between that and honestly, Tom winning Survivor is momentous to me because it's so interesting reading all this Survivor discourse in the middle of Ghost Island where people are saying like, okay, who's winning? And now people are putting in the stipulation of, well, Tom won Survivor South Africa, so essentially anything is possible at this point. And I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I just love how Tom's win specifically, I think, broke the game wide open in a way that has not been done in quite some time. Not since maybe Natalie White or Michelle Fitzgerald winning. From an editing perspective, has there been such a shocker in the Survivor community? And I wouldn't say controversy caused around him, but just this idea that people were absolutely stunned by the person that he was actually winning a season of Survivor, as circumstantial as it may have been, that it really got people's minds going as to like, okay, then who can win Survivor? And then you have Shane winning after that, who I personally thought was drawing dead for a good amount of the game. Like, I guess what I'll remember most about this year of Survivor was the unconventionality of it all. Even something like Ghost Island and David versus Goliath, which had more conventional winners. They had unique paths to take. You had someone like Lisa who's able to take an archetype that unfortunately doesn't do too well in the game and completely flip it on his head and rule over the game in her own way and end up crushing the game. You have Survivor South Africa breaking all the conventions in the book. There were so many conventions being broken. And as someone who has loved a game that's been based on a set of rules for the past 18 years, I want to see some rules get broken. So I was happy to see some rules get broken because it just spices up this game that I love so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, just in terms of general trends that some of the responders said, the RHAP patrons doing really well and like super fans going far was a big thing. Yeah,
it was absolutely the year of the patron. Most prominently, Laurel was able to make a great start of the year, coming in third place in Ghost Island, last member of her original tribe. And of course, Lisa and Nick both winning their seasons. We talked about their games earlier, but I mean, it made me super happy and proud to be a part of this RHAP community. And I could only imagine how we can go from here in 2019 when it comes to the success of the patron on Survivor.
The rise of international Survivor and the lack of off-season was big, and also just Christian as a character in general got a lot of shout-outs. Yeah, and in terms of moments, Dom and Wendell's tie was a big one. Mm-hmm. The fact that they pulled rocks in episode 2 was a big one, and Jacket Gate, I think, were like the three major moments that I was seeing. Someone else also said Biostrath, and to that I can say, like, you're welcome, Biostrath.
I'm pretty sure that was the Biostrath Twitter account.
Yeah, like someone else said that what they would remember was Dave being robbed on Survivor New Zealand. I was like, Dave, is that you? I love Dave, but like who's remembering that? I don't know. Some of these responses I really enjoyed.
Yeah, some other really fun responses that I had actually forgotten about were like, where's Davey? Which was so great. Yeah, all of the rice stuff with Angelina. The eggs, the thing that happened. I mean, there's just, there's so many fun answers. Like reading through this now, I'm just, I think so fondly now back of 2018. It was just really fun. Yeah, don't Shane effing Gould. So good.
Yeah, and I will say that on one of these responses I saw was RHAP coverage was fantastic. And not to end the podcast
You're
by patting ourselves too far on the back, but no, I actually feel like from like the Rob-centric perspective, I don't know, I feel like he was firing on all cylinders. I think that the guests he got, the recap, I mean, you could hear that firsthand in like the Best of 2018 podcast. There was just so much great stuff that came out of these podcasts, and I feel like it was spurred along by just the great material that was going on in these seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what a year. You can expect a similar level of quality from 2019, I hope. Edge of Extinction, that looks great. Champions versus Contender is again the theme for Australian Survivor, exact same theme. So a lot to look forward to.
Yeah,
Survivor New Zealand has been rested. Oh my God, I'm feeling really sad right now.
Well, let's talk about that a bit, because it's sort of like a question of where do we go from here? So we do have Edge of Extinction coming up immediately. One of the reasons why we wanted to put this out now is because you know, preseason for Edge of Extinction might be starting at any moment, basically, considering we're about a month and change from the season premiering. We're going to have, unfortunately, Celebrity Treasure Island 3 in lieu of Survivor New Zealand. Survivor South Africa.
We promised we wouldn't talk about Treasure Island.
Yes, I apologize. I guess I was thinking about the movie that Colby and Amanda and Danielle were watching. That's what was at top of my mind when talking about heroes versus villains. We will have Survivor South Africa back for Isle of Secrets. I believe they finished casting, might actually be starting to film in a couple weeks as well. I believe Ryan Brink reported that they're going to Samoa. So hopefully that means the concept of the season will go to Samoa as well in terms of being successful. We got Champions versus Contenders back. I know Nick reached out to me and said how he was not too happy to see it come back as a theme. Do we have any overall thoughts about what we might be expecting from it?
Kind of what we just saw. Probably more celebrities. Look, I feel good about what Survivor South Africa is doing in all this. So that to me, I don't know. I'm a pessimistic person, so maybe I should just stop. It will probably, you know, we thought badly on David versus Goliath, and then it was amazing. Tom won. Anything's possible. Edge of Extinction might be amazing. I'm trying to be super positive right now.
Yeah, I mean, I will always try to go in with a positive attitude, just because that's all I can take. I think with Champions versus Contenders, you know, I liked the first iteration of it. And so I hope that they will be able to take some of the elements that really worked from this past season and then, you know, be able to just have less. Well, I think it's less quits. I think what really drags down AU for me is a lot of, you know, those first like couple weeks that we talked about in a row. It was like 4 weeks in a row where it felt like quits or somebody just sort of like giving up. I think they have something to work with. I'm not too down on the theme being repeated.
I don't know, because I feel like Australia was good in spite of its theme. Like when I'm thinking about what I enjoyed about it, the theme's not really top of the list for me. Like maybe that'll still be true of the next season. I just don't see why they're going back to the well. Was anyone really loving it? I mean, like, I get why they're doing it from their perspective, but not what I would have chosen. But well, again, not the worst theme that I'm looking at in the year ahead.
I mean, I guess because it gave me so many people that I really liked watching on my television. And those type of people came because they were quote unquote champions. Like Lydia, for example, being able to see her, like, I'm just trying to think in what world would she be on my television screen for Survivor unless it was for this theme. So I'm a little thankful for that, but I can't see your point.
Yeah. And I think that also, I mean, we talked about this preseason that I feel like Champions versus Contenders actually links interestingly to David versus Goliath, even though we only got like a couple of celebrities on David versus Goliath. And when people say, oh, a David versus Goliath 2 is coming, I feel like it's when they brought back Brains, Beauty, Brawn. It's not due to the theme, it's due to the cast. And so I totally agree with Liana that I think the cast in a good amount of ways struck chords enough with the audience that I think it garnered bringing this theme back. And that being said, if this theme, like any theme, is going to rely on the cast. So if they turn out some good people, if they turn out an actual contender tribe that is competitive and can win more than two immunity challenges before a swap, then I'll be really excited. But I mean, I'm just excited to watch more Survivor. We ended on a super good note in 2018. I just hope 2019 picks up the ball and keeps running with it. Like Brian Lake. All right, let's let's go around the
whole.
That's
not how AFL works.
I don't know American sports, let alone Australian sports. So I think it's fitting for me to end and just me completely falling flat on my face. Let's go around the horn. If you want to give out your social media handle and talk about anything you might be tweeting about or working on in the podcast sphere. Shannon, let's start with you.
Well, you can follow me at Shannon Gaetz, S-H-A-N-N-O-N-G-A-I-T-Z. I'm learning. I just was in America and I kept getting the Z thing wrong. You guys don't have Z. And I've been saying it on podcasts for like a year.
We're the only country that doesn't do Z. Like Canada does Z as well. So I'm pretty sure you're not the problem. We're the weird ones here.
But it still comes back onto my social media handle. So G-A-I-T-Z. And at the moment, I'm obviously just waiting for International Survivor to start in several months, but you may be hearing me soon on some preseason stuff for Edge of Extinction with Rob. So not to spoil too much with that, but that's where you'll see me next.
Oh my God, girl, same. after. So I am on social media at Liana Boras, L-I-A-N-A-B-O-R-A-A-S. Similar with Shannon, I may be doing some preseason stuff for Edge of Extinction. Also, of course, along with Mike, doing all of the Drag Race recaps with Brent Wolgamott, which we're in the middle of All Stars 4 right now, which is so much fun. Also, I'm going to be doing some 90 Day Fiancé coverage with the season finale coming up soon, or like the last half of the tell-all finally. So be sure to check that out. It's going to be in the reality TV wrap-ups thread as like a one-off.
Ooh,
so.
I'm excited for that. My wife in particular is going to obsess over that podcast. She has like slowly brought me into the world of 90 Day Fiancé, much like I've slowly brought her into the world of International Survivor. They're on the same level, right?
Yeah, they're like pretty much the same. The crazy
International Survivor. Yeah, it's equivalent to a lot of things, I think. Yeah.
You can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. In addition to the Drag Race coverage, I'm also covering Top Chef with a panel of lovely guests on reality TV wrap-ups. In terms of the writing that I do, I'm going to be covering Celebrity Big Brother for Parade.com, doing exit press there, as well as once we get into Survivor Edge of Extinction, I'll obviously, depending on how exit press works, hopefully be doing some stuff there. I'll also be covering on The Hollywood Reporter Star Trek Discovery, which is coming back on Thursday. I'll be doing some really fun weekly stuff on that. I'm super excited to get into that, as well as odds and ends of podcasts and writing in the near future. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you all for watching Survivor. Thank you all for doing the survey. Thank you all for listening to RHAP all year long, for listening to our voices drone on endlessly about how much we love this game. It truly was just a fantastic year, and to get to cover it in any capacity was just extremely lucky, I feel like. So thank you all. Thank you all so, so much for listening. It really
And in terms of the hashtag, I got hashtag Stacey B. Not sure if anyone else.
I didn't even realize, yeah, there's this hashtag for this almost 3 hour podcast. Sure. S-T-A-C-E-Y-B-I?
E-I. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
No Z's.
Let's make this new Survivor star happen, people. Let's make Stacey B a thing. Maybe not the Stacey B and B, but we shall see come February. Thank you all so much for listening. Shannon, Liana, thank you so much for taking the time to talk through all 5 seasons of Survivor and the survey results therein. We'll talk to you soon when more Survivor comes about. But for now, take care, everyone. Bye-bye.